are back for round three, episode three, Spicy Snapper Szechuan's Snapper Sessions, featuring our beloved Perry. I'd love to pronounce his last name, but I have no idea how to pronounce it. So,
can you please do it? You have to give it a shot.
All right. So, Perry Stavropoulos.
Stavropoulos. I think I just threw a few extra peas in there. Yeah. But let's go with it.
Yes. Perry Stavropoulos or Perry Chicken, whatever you want to call him. Yeah. I don't know if he cares, but that's who's coming on.
We normally go
show.
By Perry Winkle as well. That's another good one.
Yeah. Perry Winkle or dude. The baby face, the baby face snapper slayer, either or.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. How you been, Dil?
I've been pretty all right. Very busy in all COVID world, but I don't know, can't complain. At least I've almost forgotten I'm in lockdown. Dreaming of some fish as always, but that'll be a few weeks away still. And I'm looking forward to it, Mitchell.
Lovely. So, yeah, well, I think the fishing's going to be good when you get out. So it's certainly been not too bad for me. Seasons have definitely changed and things are definitely warming up. So
sounds like you might have caught some fishies.
Yeah, I did actually catch some fishies. So obviously stage three restrictions have eased a little bit for us regional Victorians. So for anyone listening here and or around the world, COVID is bastard and we've been in restrictions. So yeah, I managed to get out for a fish because of restrictions easing up. So I went and visited my family back home in Horsham and fished the Wimmera River with my brother-in-law. And we managed to catch a couple of yellers. So he caught two, I caught one. We tried casting flies for a fair while. I got one ready, but the bite started when we turned the corner and there was heaps of wind, so we just decided to cast lures because it was just going to be easier. And we actually kind of just wanted to catch fish, so... Yeah, we persisted for a while, but yeah, in the end, I caught one fish, missed a heap of fish, and it was great because I cast at the snag, had this fish follow along, hit my lure, turned around, saw it swim with the lure, a little bit, pull it out of the water, and then I figure eighted it a little bit, and then it's come back, and I've just felt weight on it, and I was like, this is really, 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 really weird. And mind you, like I said, I've missed like six or so fish for this whole entire session, fished about 6 hours. And yeah, so I feel weight comes in and I've bloody hooked it in the pectoral fin. So that's, yeah, a bit of salt in the wounds really didn't really count when you bring them in the pectoral fin. So yeah.
Oh, well, at least he's got a hook stuck in. So I can imagine missing six hits for the session would have been feeling pretty bitter until you got that one.
Yeah, no, I think it was worse to have caught one and hooked it in the pectoral fin, to be honest.
Take it.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I guess the rest of the time just been working a bit, and today spent a whole heap of my hard-earned work monies on a heap of fly tying gear, so I bought some stuff from Beast Brushes, so Chris Adams up in South East Queensland. Also, intermediate line podcast, good dude, and bought some stuff from Brett Clark, so BWC flies as well. And I bought a GoPro Hero 9 and a stack of accessories for that. So production stuff is coming, so we're getting there slowly.
Well, we've been digging through a bit of old footage, and we're hoping it never sees the light of day because we want to get some new stuff, don't we?
It might show up. It's always good to see the old versus the new because the new GoPro is going to be unreal. So, and GoPro and also actually good filming cameras and drones and shit. So, yeah, it's going to be good.
I guess we should talk about our little podcast today. So, it's about Snapper. We got Perry. And as always, well... It's the second episode, so not as always, but as we will do, we'll always sort of open it with a bit of a sciencey little fact, because as you all know, that is what me and Mitch are about. So, I don't know, I think the cool thing with snapper here is they kind of are a close relative. They're in the same family as southern black brim, which we talked about last week. So, that family is the Sparidaes, and you will find they are very different fish. Sometimes they cross paths. But snapper, being a Sparidae, a lot of people think, snapper, if you're overseas, you might be getting a bit confused thinking it might be something like your Bohar snapper or red bass or your Kubera snapper. You're thinking big, meaty, angry fish with huge, big jaws, with big dagger teeth, big predator on the reef, or up in your estuaries and the mangroves. Couldn't really be any further away from what we call a snapper here in Australia. Ours is a bit more dull than that, but at the end of the day, we like to think they're a pretty cool fish. So, again, picture something pretty similar to a sheep's head. Big, it's a pretty decent-sized fish. They can get well and truly over 10 kilos. A common fish in Victoria, down where we are, up into New South Wales, is anywhere, what would you say, Mitch, from about a kilo to about 7 kilos. That'd be your average one.
Yeah, they're your average good-sized fish. Obviously, at the moment, we've had heaps of recruitment in our southern waterway, so we have heaps and heaps of small fish, all under size. Size down here is 28 centimetres, so lots of small fish, but like if you're good table-sized fish, yeah, I'd say between that 1 and sort of 7 kilos.
Yeah, absolutely. And little fact for you, so the traditional what is known around the world as a snapper, that's from the family Luthganidae, where snapper is Sparidae. So very different fish, but the two will cross paths, especially once you start getting into the northern end of their zones around, say, like anywhere from Coffs Harbour and up into Queensland, where you get snapper and mangrove jacks and Moses perch and boha snapper and all of those. They'll cross paths, you'll get them together, and they're pretty cool. And so where can you find them? They are found all through Australasia, so massive populations in Victoria, Queensland, New South Wales. They go down to Tassie in the warmer months, as far as I know, and you'll also find them all the way in Western Australia. So up, I think it's to about Shark Bay, maybe a little further north. And yeah, so quite abundant in Australia, overseas, New Zealand, as I said, but you'll also find China, Japan, I think the Philippines has them as well. And it's pretty much all the same species, Pagurus aratus. There is a couple of different genetic lines out there, though. So they do vary a little bit.
Yeah, there's not a whole... I don't think there's a whole heap in Queensland, but I think they sort of breach into that lower southern
Queensland. Yeah, they go, I think, to the, about the southern end of the Great Barrier Reef, I think around Gladstone, don't quote me on that. I think in the cooler months when they get a bit... the water's only, I think, 22, 23 degrees, I'll push to there. Not too much further, but yeah, you can catch them when you are bottom bashing up there. I've seen a few guys picking up like corals, trout, red emperor, and then all of a sudden snapper in the mix as well, just for something different.
Hmm. Pretty cool.
Yes. Well, I reckon we should introduce our periwinkle.
Yeah, I think we could probably do that. There's a few other things we might talk about in the rest of the podcast regarding some science as well, but we'll pick that up when we go talk about some other stuff. All right, so the old periwinkle... I reckon we just get him on. He can tell us a bit about himself instead of us getting it all wrong, because I'm sure we've got it wrong already. So, Perry, we'll get him on.
Welcome, Perry.
Hey, boys. How you going?
Not too bad. We've heard you've been catching a few snook on the troll recently.
I love snook fishing, especially trolling.
Good.
Yeah, well, you're not really welcome here, but that's all right.
We'll ask you to leave soon enough unless you can prove yourself
worthy.
For me, snapper or a bycatch for them.
Yes. So snook in the bay, Sergeant Baker offshore, as we understand. The old dragon snapper.
Especially the gurnet offshore.
Oh, loving.
Licking the lips.
Oh.
Perry, who are you?
So, well, I am Perry, and the last name is Stavropoulos.
Stavropoulos?
Yeah, a few too many P's.
Yeah.
Bit about me. 21 years old. I am from Geelong. I work at Trelly's Fishing World in Geelong. So same as Dylan, but I'm just in the Geelong store and just love fishing. That's about me.
And do you have a bit of a knack with the old snapper, as far as we understand?
Oh, I've been doing all right last few seasons. Yeah, especially on the cast, with soft plastics in particular. Yeah. And very do love to go offshore and do a bit of slow pitch jigging too. That's always a bit of fun. But yeah,
snapper. How long have you been fishing for the old snapper?
Oh, ever since I've been fishing, really. So I probably started fishing about 8 years ago. And ever since I started fishing, it was always my goal to, you know, catch snapper. I've always loved them, and still love them to this day. Yeah, so I guess you could say my whole fishing career. So yeah, about 8-9 years now.
Yeah, well, they're a pretty versatile fish like that. I guess we all started off bait fishing, and I guess at some point or another, we've always come along a few snapper or a few pinkies.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Like, started land-based, and as you said, so successful, you can catch them nearly, especially around where I live, around Geelong, nearly any land bay structure, you can find a snapper. And then was lucky enough to get a boat and, as you said, started doing a lot of bait fishing and then gone to the soft plastics and haven't looked back since.
That's what we like to see. They're good fun lures. Yeah.
Do you troll for them much, Perry?
Oh, not really, no.
Well, that's good. No. You're slowly passing the criteria.
I might have cut. Him on a bit longer now.
Yeah, you can stay for another 5 minutes.
Oh, that's all right. Cheers, boys.
All right. So I guess, Perry's obviously told us a little bit about himself, probably leaving a bit. He probably hasn't told us that he looks like a baby.
Apparently so, baby face,
I was with Trelly the other day and he did mention you have your mother's soft features.
Oh, that's all right then.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've been into Trelly's in Geelong, you'll know his pretty little cute boy face.
The kid who looks 13 behind the counter standing around doing nothing.
Literally stop working on the app.
I'm asking about the snapper. Is as much shit as will hang on you, Pez, you can catch a fish. And your lures get very deep.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
By snook.
By snook. Too many times.
Alrighty. So I guess moving on, we've given him enough of a hard in time in the intro. So I guess we should talk about why we all like snapper. Like, what is the allure of the snapper that makes us want to fish for them? So, Perez, I know, like, often, especially this time of year, going onwards, you love fishing for reds. Why is that? Like, what draws you to them?
Oh, good question. I reckon with snapper, I can literally, well, anyone can go out there and literally target them 12 months of the year, whether that's in the bay, offshore, whatever. You know, you can slow pitch jig, which I really like doing during the winter months, generally because it's not that great inside the bay. Yeah, you still get them, but they are generally a little bit smaller, and offshore we've got a bit more variety, so I'd rather target the same size fish offshore and have the chance of all the other cool species you get out there.
Oh, and especially then, out deep.
Especially out deep, you get the variety out there is just crazy. But, and especially in the summer, like pretty much from now, so end of September, right through to, you could say, nearly Easter, you can go out there, target, and get great success. And with soft plastic, it's just such easy fishing in terms of, like, one rod you can get away with, a couple of bags of plastics, a couple of jig heads, and you're fishing. And for me, I think they're a cool-looking fish, and they fight hard, so I love them, yeah.
No, and especially, like, as you said, like, they're an accessible species. Like, I know how many times I've done it. Like, I'll be driving through Geelong, and on the way, I'll literally whack a packet of plastics and jig heads in my pocket, go for a walk along the waterfront, and every now and then you'll smack, like, off more so pinkies, but every now and then you might pick up a 2-2.5 kilo fish land-based. Like, they're really
absolutely
cool in that regard, that anyone can get onto them. And you don't need fancy gear. You don't need an awesome skill level of knowing what you're doing. Like, it can be as simple as literally throwing out a piece of gulp on a jig head, letting it sink down, flicking it when you feel like it, and it gets jammed.
Absolutely.
And they fight hard and they look great, and that's why we love them, I guess.
Yeah, they pull hard, they hit hard. That's probably one of my favorite things, the first hook set, especially when you're using plastics, just drive that hook into their mouth. It's just, they just scream, and that's just awesome. Can't get enough of that.
No, especially when in one hit, you feel the weight after you haven't had it all day, and it turns out to be a big, filthy snook on the end.
Oh, that's the best, especially when you're trolling.
And then you drop it on the deck of your boat, and it gets all in the carpet, and it smells really good.
Mm, that's a good one too, actually, yeah.
That's the main reason you go, isn't it?
For me, snapper or eye catch.
Yeah, I heard you like to lick a couple of snook on your days off.
Catch, kiss, and release.
You kiss them on the mouth?
Sometimes. If it's a good one, I will. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
What about thumb gripping? Have you thumb gripped a snapper or a snook?
Definitely not a snook. A snapper, I don't think I have. I don't recall, so no.
And for those out there, we're not being serious about that. I would highly, highly, highly recommend you do not thumb grip a snapper. We have heard of plenty of horror stories. I think I got a good one. I remember hearing this would have been easy 10 years ago. Someone, I think they were fishing out around the old, I think it was Wilson Spit Pez, and they caught a really good early season snapper about that 7.5-8 kilo mark, which is a fantastic fish for Inkaroa.
Oh, ripper.
And one of their mates stupidly played a bit of a joke on it, on his mate, and said, oh, you can tell an early season fish if it's a resident fish or a fish that's just come into the bay by feeling the back molars. If they're ground down, it means it's a resident fish that's eating mussels. And if it's got spiky teeth, it means it's a fish that's just come in fresh from offshore that's been eating squid and pillies and anchovies. And, well, I guess you could say it was a very good prank because he took it literally, stuck his thumb right to the back of that snapper's mouth, and I think you can guess what happened next. They don't get the name snapper for no reason. And that was a trip to the surgical clinic at Geelong Hospital after that.
Oh, I've definitely been nipped a few times, but never gone that deep into one. Haven't been keen enough to do that.
I would not recommend it. Now, it could be an old wives' tale, but I did see an article out there, so I'm sure if you ever Google it, it'll pop up. Pretty nasty one, that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, not fun at all. And also, no thumb gripping snook because, yeah, they got pointy ones and they're going to put holes in you. Good days. Oh,
if you do that, that's your own fault.
Yeah.
You just look at one of those things and straight away you'll think, oh, I'm not sticking any appendage in that.
One of the many scissors, like scissors of the sea.
Well, I think we touched on that last week with our Taylor talk. So Taylor are scissors of the sea. Snook are scissors of the sea, except they look a bit more ferocious and scary. Tell you that.
Then when you're offshore, you've got Barracuda.
Oh.
Silver scissors. Gross.
Silver scissors.
they're basically just a long, slender tube with teeth. And if you eat them, they've got bones coming out of their wazoo. So, yeah, just scissors.
And
just,
worms.
And worms. So, so many worms. Ugh. All right. So, that's a bit of the Allura species. Like, I really like them because they're so accessible and they're basically everywhere. And if you look hard enough, you'll see them and find them basically all over the regions that Dylan has talked about. So I love them. And they're so, like, yeah, bait, lures, flies, they eat everything. So going into that, I think we'll talk a bit about the modern tactics and why we use them and how we sort of go about using them as well. So, Dil, I guess we'll start with plastics.
Yeah, well,
Harry, chime in wherever you like to.
So... it's funny. We talked a lot about brim last week and the sort of evolution of the fishery. Now, a lot has changed with snapper fishing, but it's still very old school. The only new introductions, I'd say, and I'm sure you boys would agree, would be slow pitch and micro jigging. And you could argue they're really not that new in the scene. They've both been around for a long time. I've certainly been doing both methods for, I think, 5 years, no stress, probably 6 years or more. Plastics. So I guess I remember hearing about snapper fishing ever since I could remember with plastics. I guess it's really become big in, say, the last 10 years, especially within Port Phillip Bay and offshore down here in Victoria. So there's a lot of brands and everything else out there. Like Berkeley Gulp was probably one of the first brands that came onto the market. And you know what? Through the shop, I think Pez would agree, it's still probably the biggest selling brand in terms of snapper, wouldn't you say, Pez?
It's one of those ones, if you want to go out and catch a snapper, Gulp. It will work. Yes, you will get a few snooks and a few this and that. And they aren't the most durable plastic, but they do get very eaten, as Dylan would say.
Yeah. And you'll often find as well as the plastics that, like, traditionally it's you're fishing like your jerk shad styles and your minnows and your turtleback worms. So plastics that are long, slender, they don't have much action. But what I've noticed a lot in the last, 4 to 5 years of my own fishing anyway, a lot of a trend that sort of with the whole development of cod fishing and the American bass stuff coming over, we're getting a lot more trendier plastics like your big paddle tails and ribbed things like your Kytec, what fat swing packs, they've sort of come onto the market a whole heap and it's really cool. It's thrown a lot of different options out there and I found especially when targeting bigger snapper, it's been fantastic purely because there's a few more profiles out there, a lot of which even I overlooked, but I found myself picking up a lot more. So, Pez, have you tried many of them or are you more traditional?
It's hard to go past Gulp a lot of the time. I'm not going to lie. I have tried the Kytex. I haven't done the greatest with them, more so with smaller fish. But Z-Man's another really good one. Absolutely. Love me Z-Man. Especially when I'm on a good bite, I'm on a good school and I'm getting fish every few casts and I'm not that fussy. I'll switch to Z-Man because, as you all know, Z-Man's a lot more durable than Gulp. I'm not rinsing through a Gulp every cast in his way.
Which is great. Like even with Snapper, you'll have sessions where, especially when there's a lot of pinkies around, you might catch 20 fish on a single plastic without changing. Where Gulp, if you catch 20 fish, chances are, especially with those better fish, you've gone through 20 plastics. Not very efficient in terms of tackle storage.
Yeah.
But hey, it keeps us in a job, doesn't it? It's good.
Exactly right. Spooky bypass, they're okay, but also the Berkeley power baits, that one's been really good. Particularly
the years and they always work.
Oh, the 4-inch minnow in pearl watermelon.
Yeah.
Classic.
Absolutely. And the really cool thing about plastics is you can fish. Like, I do a lot of snapper fishing where people might overlook, which we'll touch on later. Like, say, really shallow water, say, I kid you not, sometimes a meter, sometimes less, out to, say, about 30 meters of plastics. Not too often I like going deeper. There is more different techniques, such as slow pitch and micro jigging, which we'll move on to next. But plastics allows you to fish land-based boat, kayak, rough water, whatever it might be, dead calm. You can pitch them into pylons and slowly sink it down really naturally, or you can plummet it down and just hop it on the bottom. Plenty of versatility in the way. But I guess I just mentioned it, slow pitch and micro jigging, which I've done a fair bit of, but I know Perry's probably done a bit more in a few different locations than we have. So what's it all about, Pez?
So slow pitch jigging, as the name says, just jigging offshore, typically on reefs, I find best where I find the fish. Just on your with a slow pitch, obviously in the name, it is a much slower approach. So very, very slow lift of the rod, one wind, maybe half a wind at a time, and basically just bouncing them on their heads. And the biggest tip with those I give anyone is if you don't mark fish, don't bother. Don't jig until you mark something, I reckon.
Especially whether it's finding bait on a slow day, but more often than not, like down here where we fish, you won't have trouble finding at least schools of pinky snapper, especially in that, say, 20 to 50 metres of water where it's quite accessible to sound those fish up. But by all means, we're fishing jigs up to 140, 150 metres of water sometimes for snapper. And you're going upping your tackle and upping your jig weights, but it's still just as effective. If you've got a good sounder, which we'll talk about later, you can well and truly find fish crystal clear in those depths. And the cool thing is bycatch. There's a lot of other bits and pieces out there that love eating a jig, which just makes it even more appealing, whether it be kingfish or trumpeter or God knows what, nanagai, everything.
Cool. Absolutely. And for me, I go off bale heads quite a fair bit. And for me, I can go out the bar there, drive not even 2 minutes, and I'm in great jigging grounds for snapper. Just in like 20 metres of water, I'm on prime ground and it's awesome. Super accessible as well. If you got a boat, it's very accessible. Obviously, it's not that easy when you're land-based, but if you're in a boat, it's fantastic.
That's the good thing. And we've talked about a lot about, like, say, offshore fishing with your slow pitching, but you can still, especially more micro jig, I've had great success of it in Port Phillip. I just haven't really whacked any big fish doing it, I'll be honest there, but it's a cool way sometimes to fish. Like, I remember the first ever time I heard about micro jigging with the whole Storm Cuica movement came onto the scene about 5 years ago. We went off Clifton Springs. I remember the first time we were just sounding up and down the channel and I saw a big arch on the sounder, dropped the jig on its head, hooked up straight away, big blistering run. And I'm like, oh, how good's this? Got a good fish. And did that happen again? No, but got lots of pinkies and everything else. And it was great fun just to mix it up, I guess. Certainly not as effective as offshore, but.
Unfortunately, I didn't have the same luck in the bay. Like, I gave him a good crack in the bay, same as you saw it, got all excited, gave it a good crack once again at Clifton Springs and, got a few pinkies and whatnot, but didn't quite crack those quality fish you'd hope to catch that you expect to get on the soft plastics. But offshore, it's fantastic once you get the hang of it.
Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome.
And in terms of jigging, I've done a little bit of it land-based as well. So
it's shore jigging.
Yeah, shore jigging is a really, really effective method in terms of covering heaps of distance. So, like, and it's reasonably effective. Have you done any of that, Dill or Perry?
Personally, I haven't. When I was in Japan, though, I saw a few guys doing it in a zone that I know they get some big snapper. I've seen on YouTube and online. It was sort of, if you can imagine, over there they've got some pretty cool areas and it often drops real deep, which it doesn't so much here. So, like, they're fishing off rock platforms and old like causeways and everything, or it might be dropping into 10, 15, 20 metres, which is really perfect for that style of fishing because you can get your jig down deep, close to the shore, and you got access to a lot of cool fish. And they were catching sort of small snapper and chinoo and little kingfish and all sorts of stuff. I've tried it here in Australia, not so much for snapper, but I have had success doing it. That's for sure.
Yeah, like it's not something I do all the time, but every so often if I find myself land-based, say, at like a large pier, jetty and stuff, so say Portland, Lee Breakwater, Warrnambool Breakwater, and all those platforms are quite high-rised. If obviously you don't have access to a boat and you want to try and cover a lot of water, it's a really good technique. Little like 15-gram jigs, little assist hooks on the top of it, slow jigs, all that sort of stuff. They're really good for just covering lots of water. And it's like Perry and Dill were saying, slowless is a rod, sort of almost working it like a soft plastic in a sense. And they just work really well to cover heaps of water. So if they're the sorts of areas that you're around, it's definitely a method worth trying as well.
I think one thing we've sort of skipped over, I was literally thinking in my head then, I was going to say, when I have shore jigged, I've had a lot more success with micro jigs, probably opposed to slow pitch. So I think we should probably explain, first of all, the difference. What is a micro jig? What is a slow pitch jig? So, Perry, I'll give that one to you.
All right. So, might have to jump in here. I'm not the best with identifying the two, but the way I look at it, the micro jig, I see it as just like a standard little knife jig, but just working a little bit slower, or a little bit slower, and is a little bit smaller. But with your slow pitch, it's a much more different approach to it. Obviously, in the name, it's a lot slower. And the weight is typically weighted central to the jig. It can vary on brands and whatnot, but yeah, that's probably the biggest difference I see in them. But I typically have much more better success with slow pitch.
It's funny. As I was saying, like, I love my slow pitch offshore. I find it's a lot more effective, but then land-based than I have done it. Micro jigs just work better for me. With snapper anyway, like if you're talking about kingfish, I'll often always go straight to micro jigs. Just works a lot better with those more pelagics, whether it be trevally, salmon, any other sort of common pelagic sort of offshore species down here. But I guess that covers micro jigging and slow pitch pretty well. But Mitch, you was going to say something?
Oh, sorry. I find from Chase, as you said, the more like your salmon, your kingfish, even your tuna, I find a micro jig's a lot more effective. But if you're chasing like your reef fish, which generally aren't as crazy and as aggressive, that's when the slow pitch really comes into its own. And even when the other fish are a bit more shut down, a slow pitch can be a great tactic. And one, yeah, kings and tuna, we've got heaps of those on slow pitch if you can't get on the micro jigs.
And with your slow pitch jigs, are you fishing them slack, like just dropping them on slack lines? Are you dropping them tight lines, overhead reels, spin reels? What sort of setups are you using for just for those? Just really quickly. We'll get onto it in a minute, but like...
For me, I'm running an overhead setup. So the exact rod I'm using, it's a Witchcrest, by Palms. Very, very soft or slow rod, however you want to call it. Awesome for working jigs. It hasn't got the most power to it, but for working jigs, it's fantastic. And I'm using an overhead reel with, I believe, PE 1.2, which is about the same diameter as the average 12-pound braid. Purely because it's a bit more hydrodynamic, if you could call that a word. So it has a bit less drag in the water. And when I let it sink, I try and give it a bit of slack just so it gets down nicely. And I can always watch the line for any bites on the way down.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, because I've obviously been, like, it's not my sort of forte, but I have been watching a few videos lately and trying to sort of fill in the blanks where I don't know some things. And yeah, I've just sort of seen it like slow jigging and stuff's been overhead reel predominantly, and then sinking it down, obviously fast, but like, yeah, in control with your line too. So
yeah, you want to get it down with an overhead, you do have to control it. You can get an overrun, but I find when you're actually working a jig, to be able to click it in and out of gear, free spool back to the bottom, essentially without letting go of the reel, is awesome.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's certainly something that I'd love to do a bit more of. I haven't spent that much time offshore. So it's like offshore in the bays and stuff. It's been a heaps of time, but yes, I haven't been in the waters where I've been able to do heaps of jigging. So yeah, that's something I'm super interested in. So it's good to hear.
Yeah, and like as we sort of touched on, like you might be getting the vibe slow pitch micro jigging. It is, to be honest, a lot more. it can seem like a very simple method, but in all honesty, it's got a lot more technicality to it. Once you've done it a few times, you really do get the feel for it. There's some fantastic, fantastic little demonstrations and videos out there on it. Like if you look up like Fred Go, for instance, on YouTube, you will find tons of info on it. Like you will find predominantly it is more overheads. It's very technique specific in the rods about actions and everything. Like Perry just touched on it then. If you want any more info, please don't hesitate. Message it. Either one of us three, so we'll get our details up later, but we're by no means experts, but we all have done a little bit of it, and I'd like to say we know something about it, I guess.
Well, you guys do work at a tackle store, so you should be knowing something about everything in terms of fishing, so and if you don't, Perry, have a long hard look. I mean, Perry, Trally, have a long hard look at your employees.
Keyword, should.
Should the Periwinkle know about everything? Yes, but he doesn't. He just knows about snook.
Pike.
Filthy snook.
Pike on the troll.
Yeah, well, speaking about knowing absolutely nothing, Fly Mitch, I know nothing about snapper and fly. Tell me it all. Everything there is. Hit me. 5 minutes, go.
5 minutes. It probably takes me about 30 seconds, if I'm honest. So
even better.
Fly fishing for snapper, it's something that I've only been recently introduced to, and by introduced, I mean I've learned a small amount off the fly fishing club that I'm involved with. So that's the Ballerine Fly Fishing Association down here in Geelong. Those guys have taught me a fair bit about at least what sorts of flies that they use. And that's not necessarily the be all and end all of it. It's been around for a fair while. It's been done all the way from Southeast Queensland, all around the same areas. That Dill talked about the distribution. It's probably biggest over in New Zealand, obviously because it's got the fly fishing scene from the trout, and that's carried over into the saltwater stuff too, so that into kingfish, snapper as well. It's predominantly one of those things that you kind of want to target them in more shallow, like in the shallower waters. Fly fishing gets really, really, really challenging in the deeper the water gets. So I've been doing most of my line just fishing an intermediate line, so a full intermediate line as opposed to an intermediate sink tip, which is floating running line, intermediate head. So I'm using full intermediate line, and I'm fishing pretty shallow, so basically no deeper than about 3 to 4 meters. And if I was going to go fish any deeper than about 4 meters, I'd probably switch to a sinking line, so in the D3 or D5 categories. And they, like, you can go with like D9s and stuff as well too if you want to fish a fair bit deeper. I've just been fishing a lot of small flies, trying to catch a bunch of different species at the same time. But a lot of my snapper stuff, I've been trying to do at nighttime, targeting some shallow structure, looking for those bigger fish coming in close at nighttime. So tying some like little bucktail deceivers, with a little bit of, with all the, like, in sciencey terms, the different colors attract different, like, attract or utilize different wavelengths of light. So purple is one color that gets picked up really, really well. Chartreuse as well. White, gold, they're all colors that are really good for like nighttime fishing, because they sort of, they're wherever the color spectrum goes, they're just there in terms of like good nighttime flies.
It catches the light, like the available light, whether it be unnatural light from a pier light or if there's moons out that night, like what we would perceive as dark to a fish that is a predator at night. Now, sure, they use their lateral line to pick up on everything going through the water, but they will still see like almost a glimmer of scales or anything else throwing light off, and that's what you're trying to imitate.
Yeah, that's right. So I put little bits of flash in there. Well, it's a very, very simple fly. It doesn't take a whole lot of time to tie up if you're a fly tyer. And I'm just casting as close as I can to structure, sinking them down for a few seconds because, like I said, I'm only fishing a couple of meters of water. I'm also running a sounder just to make sure that I know exactly the depth of the water that I'm fishing. And I tend to run my sounder in feet now because with all your sinking lines, they'll come sink in, their sink rates will be in inches per second, so it's a lot easier to translate inches per second into feet. So I'm monitoring all that sort of stuff with my intermediate line, counting it down to where to the roughly the area that I want it to be like fishing. So generally the bottom third of the water column, so probably 2 feet down is roughly where I'm fishing in a lot of spots, down to about 4 or 5 feet is about the depth that I really, really like to target. And I'm going out there twitching like short little strips after I've sent my fly down. And that's been working really well. And we'll touch on like the capture side of it in a minute, at the end of the episode. But that's the sort of stuff that I use. I also use little worm flies if I'm sight casting them, because I've been in some spots where I can sight cast them. BMS patterns, same as the brim stuff. They're very transferable. But I really, really do want to try and catch some much larger fish on fly. So I'm in the process of acquiring some gear that's going to make that a bit more manageable, because some of the places that I'm hopefully likely to encounter these fish, it's going to be pretty gnarly territory. So stay tuned for that. And as I develop it, it's something that we might go forward. We might talk about more in the future. So that's sort of what I would be doing with fly fishing. Intermediate lines, reasonably light, sort of like 7, 8, 9 weights, 10 weights if you got them. If you're targeting really big fish, if you're in the open and you've got lots of room to play, I'd be sticking in that 6 to 7 weight, 8 weight lines, just because it's nice stuff for saltwater. Saltwater rods, saltwater reels, if you can afford them. If not, wash it all down. Make sure you're washing all your stuff down. Saltwater, it does nasty things to all your gear. So
that's what I'm saying. It's made of metal and it gets touched with the salt, even stainless. So that's the thing. Look after your gear, everyone. Otherwise, you'll be having a horrible time in your fishing life, and you'll be spending your life's savings
at trellies.
That's good.
Yeah, come spend it there. If you want to trash your gear, we'll help you get new gear that you can trash later down the track. Well, I guess moving on from sort of like the tactics associated with snapper fishing, I guess we should talk about sort of like what our favorite gear, like rods, reels, lures, whatever it be. We've sort of touched on parts of it, but I guess now we'll go into a bit of depth. So, Perry, when you're fishing for snapper, like, you know, start with the bass, talk about it deep first if you want, cross it over. What rods and reels in particular are you using? So what are you looking for in your snapper outfits for each method? Give us some brands. Tell us what to stick away from. Like, what do you use, man?
Yeah, man. So we'll start with the plastics, I suppose. I'm not the most fussiest person when it comes to rods for the plastics. Typically, I like anything, say, 6'9" to 7'3", I suppose you could say. But the biggest thing for me is, sounds a bit silly, is actually the grip setup. Something I think is very overlooked, because I'm holding that thing all day. I want that to be very comfortable in my hands. And a lot of rods, which I'm about to touch base on with the particular blank I like, the grips are real bulky, real big, real long butt on it, and I just hate it. Can't use it all day. So, and the blanks I like using are typically real stiff rods, like the Supper Broomstick, purely because snapper got a pretty hard mouth. And I really want to, when I get that bite, I really want to reef that hook as hard as I can.
Especially on those bigger fish, you've got to send that.
Which, yeah, like, I can think of countless times using, you know, softer rods. Now, there's no brands that do it better than others. Personally, I'm using a Mega Bass Destroyer in a 4 to 12 pound, I believe it is. And it sounds very light, but it has got a lot of grunt to it. And just like a small 2500 reel, and using similar gear that's spec'd, you know, identical, a lot softer action, and you try and set those hooks, they just don't stick on those bigger fish. The smaller fish are okay, but you find those bigger fish, you try and reef a hook in it, and it just doesn't happen. You lose a lot of fish, I find.
And like I will touch, so for those who aren't familiar with a Mega Bass Destroyer, they're what I call in my own little head, sort of like not an old school blank, but I find they're that classic extra fast blank that was incredibly popular, say, about 10 years ago. And for snapper fishing, that is exactly what you want. That is exactly what we recommend to anyone who comes into the shop. There's quite a few of the newer age rods you pick up, and they're quite soft in the action, purely because that's what's adapted to modern techniques. Now, if you're fishing for, say, barramundi with a similar setup, fishing surface frogs or anything, you might want to soft the rod so they can really suck that lure in and you can hit them. But with snapper, you really need that tip to work that plastic and then drive that hook home, exactly like we were saying. So,
absolutely. And
the extra fast action. Mega Bass Destroyer almost does it better than any other out there. They are primo. And there's a few good ones. Like, personally, I'm running like Perry, I like a rod over 6'10". I've got a 7'6" Miller rod Beastbuster. I use for my bigger plastic. So anything in that sort of quarter ounce to a 3/8 head with about a 4-inch to 7-inch plastic, my bigger fish, love that rod. Absolutely make short work of fish when they're in structure. But when you're fishing open flats, send it a mile and it's just a beautiful action. Great rod for it, and they're not going to cost you an arm or a leg either. Besides that, when I'm fishing tighter areas, I've got just old school G Loomis drop shots. Extra fast action, pull fish out, set the hook home. These rods have been around for years. They don't cost an arm and a leg, and they are fantastic.
I think the next best rod I've found, if I didn't have the Destroyer, was, I can't think of the exact model, but it was a TD Commander, one of the new ones.
Oh, I think my God, it's good.
That's a schmick rod, that one there.
Yeah, I think it's a 3 to 5 kilo off the top of my head. It's funny. It's a lighter blank, but it's just perfect.
Oh, it's crisp. And as I was saying about the grip setup, that rod, my Destroyer, it's a very stiff rod and got a lot of power to it. And I find a lot of rods that to me feel the same. I have that feel that I like for snapper. I've got, as I said, bulky grips and long bats. But this one here, it's almost like the same grip setup you'd expect to see on like a 6-pound or 8-pound setup, which for me, I can hold that all day, throw it all day, and just it's easy.
Yeah. And look, I will touch one thing. I literally learnt this in sort of my last snapper session before I was on lockdown. Obviously, I've been running and trying a whole heap of different rods, and I was trying a few rods that had skeleton grips. Now, these rods I found for my trout, brim, everything, fantastic. But the second you get in 2 to 3, 3.5 kilo snapper with in structure running tight drag, the skeleton grip was, you could feel it flexing, you could feel it moving. I did not have the feel and sensitivity to pull that fish out of the structure. Or should I say just the muscle and grunt, because I felt like I was going to rip my reel off the rod. Now, like Perry said, you want to find that happy medium. You don't want a big chunky broomstick of a rod, but you don't want something that's super finesse. Like, definitely you want to meet in the middle there, don't you?
I know when I first started getting into soft plastics for the snapper, in my head, 4,000, 5,000 size reel, 20-pound braid and like 8 kilo stick. And yeah, if you do want to bait fish, but we're all about casting. If you do want to bait fish, it's a great setup, but if you want to chuck lures, you've got a couple of hours and you're done.
Yeah.
It's just not, in my opinion, it's just not enjoyable.
One of my setups is like that. It's a 5,000 reel, 4 to 8 kilo rod. It is a purpose-built plastic outfit, but I'll only pick that up when I'm fishing for a larger fish offshore where there's a chance of, say, kingfishers bycatch when you get the rats around, or fishing at tight structure. And, like, when you have to go that heavy, otherwise you're just going to get shredded. But definitely you want to be looking for that three to five kilo rod in that 7 foot to 7 foot 6 range is going to be perfect for your fish down here. If you're going up north fishing offshore on the reef, say around Sydney or Coffs or anything like that, I do notice the guys up there. Personally, I haven't done much of that, but they seem to love that slightly heavier stuff, which we're talking about with your 4,000, 5,000 size reels. Cannot go wrong.
Yeah.
And on that reel, what are you looking for in a reel, and what reels are you running? What do you like? What don't you like?
Yeah. For me, I'm not super fast with reels. At the moment, I'm running one of the new Shimano Twin Powers in a 2500. Awesome reel, super smooth, nice drag. But in my opinion, I don't look too much into the reel. I just go whatever feels nice, whatever balance is nice. Yep, that's a winner. But as I do with all my gear, I'm not being a salesman here. Just get the best you can afford, and it won't let you down. You'll have it forever.
No, absolutely. And like we touched on it last week with the drags, like the more money you're spending on a reel, the better drag system gearing you're getting. Personally, I find with snapper, like last week we mentioned how the rod really does come into it. Like I find with snapper, the reel comes into it a lot more. I will still say rod is everything. You can spend $100 and get a reel that'll catch your snapper on plastics, but it gets to that point. Like, let's be honest, these are bigger fish. They're running. They weigh a couple of kilos. They are starting to put gear and pressure on those. So they're starting to put like pressure and torque on those gears. The more you spend straight up, the less you're going to have to spend in the long run, purely because the gears in that reel are going to cope with it. Like for instance, Shimano Stratix, Daiwa BGs, they're some great sort of lower end to mid-range reels that you're not forking an arm and a leg for, and they are bulletproof. Like, they will catch your fish for years and years and years. Like, I've had a few of my Stratix for probably, I think the first generation CI4s, I got two of them, Still use them all the time for my snapper. I haven't even had to change the drag washers. They're going shit hot still. Bearings are still really good. Probably have all I've done is change the roller bearings and they're kicking on. But then at the minute, I'm running Daiwa Certates in a 2510, and that reel's been fantastic.
Mm. I suppose if it was one thing I looked in for a reel is I don't tend to go more of a finesse style reel. So, for example, we'll use Daiwa. If I was looking at a Luvius or a Certate, I would go Certate just a bit stronger, a bit heavier build, and that's just what I like. That's probably the only thing I really look into it in terms of.
Not the funniest story there. So we had a snap at the end of I think it was the break between the last lockdown. Went fishing with Hawksy and he brought out his Daiwa Emeralds. He was some shit hot JDM model he paid near on four figures for. And
the Emeralders.
Yeah.
Ooh, they're such good, they're such tasty, tasty reels.
Beautiful finesse reel, but that reel met its day thanks to a lovely pole snapper that blasted pretty damn hard and seized a few gears. So, like Pez said, if you're tossing up between a Luvius or a Certate or whatever it be, do not choose the finesse option and don't be tempted to take your finesse options out. Like, you will regret it. Like, you can pay $200 and get a bloody awesome, beefy, no bullshit reel that will catch you all the snappers and it will do it well.
It sounds like I better come into the shop, boys, and visit you and get myself an updated snapper combo because all mine are still brim combos because I don't do enough snapper fishing. And if I am, I'm trying to do it on fly. Just, I'm making life real hard for myself.
Or you'll try.
Well, on the fly note, what do you got, dude? Tell us.
What do I have? So I probably don't have the most appropriate gear. So for all the sort of tight structure stuff, so basically for what I've been doing with fly at the moment, I've been running probably not the most appropriate gear for it, although I've been in the market looking to upgrade some stuff. So I've been running a Vision Onky, which is more a trout sort of style rod, so it's a slower action. But I didn't buy it for that. I've just been making do with what I've got. And then I'm running Titan Taper lines, a Titan Taper, Scientific Angler Titan Taper full intermediate line. So that's a sonar model. And then I'm running it. Yeah, so that's basically what I'm running. Or the sonar, Scientific Angler Sonar integrated D5, D3 intermediate line, which is a sinking line. The science behind that's pretty cool. It's just designed to keep you more connected and reduce the belly in your line. So that's just a really cool line for your deeper stuff. And I've used that a bit, and they're really good. They definitely help you keep you connected. And then reel, I'm using a Hardy ASX. ASX? I've got it right in front of me. What is ASR, I think, actually. Hardy ASR 6000, which is more predominantly freshwater reel, again, but as long as you wash them and you treat them right, wash them down, wipe down your lines, inox all the parts, grease them and stuff, they're pretty good. But I would definitely recommend if you're doing saltwater stuff as your predominant method of fly fishing, go spend the money on your good CNC reels that are of saltwater resistant drags. Like, I'd say the best entry level ones for that would probably be the Reddington Grand reels. They're like $500, $550. They're pretty expensive in terms of fly fishing to get sealed drags. Yeah, they're fairly expensive, but that's the cheaper end of the scale in terms of saltwater fly fishing.
Well, let's be honest, you're getting a sealed drag for your money. If you are running a reel without that sealed drag, you're going to be buying another one before you.
That's right.
You might as well have just spent that $500 straight away and got the run for the job. It's going to last you.
That's right. So, like, everyone out there at the moment is buying Reddington Behemoths for everything, and they're a fantastic reel, and their drag system is basically the same as the Reddington Grands, except for the components they use to build them. Half of it is, not half it, but a fair portion is plastic, and they're also a cast reel, so if you drop them, they'll just shatter and they'll break, whereas the CNC is a lot more forgiving. So a CNC reel is a solid block of, like, a solid block of alloy cut out by a machine. So this is, it's a solid reel versus a cast reel, which is a molded thing. And then not to mention, like, also the drags on them. So an unsealed drag lets water in, but they're not designed really to get wet. And if it is, it's designed for predominantly for freshwater stuff, so it's not so bad. Whereas, say, anything with a seal drag sealed, water's not going to get in, and it's definitely designed for saltwater stuff. And there are, like I said, cheap is like $500 to $600 for saltwater entry-level saltwater reel. So, like Dill said, by reading to Behemoth for $150, use it once, forget to look after, like use it, you might use it 10 times, and then you forget to use it once, like you forget to wash it once, sorry, and your reel's cooked. And then you spend another $150 and you might as well just bought one good reel. It sort of is a bit more forgiving. So I will be doing that in the near future when funds allow me. But it's just, it is like fly fishing. It's an expensive hobby. And in terms of rods, like I mentioned earlier, that's sort of, I'd say the upper limits of fly fishing, so 7s through to 10 weights are probably your really good bets. 10 weights are probably for your large fish, and saltwater rods, so they're really, really fast action rods. So similar to what Perry was saying before, you want a stiffer rod. Your saltwater rods are way faster action, much stiffer, a lot more grunt down the bottom end of them. So that's the sort of rod that you want to go for as well.
Yeah, sounds good. And I guess the next thing we'll just briefly touch on, we've already sort of mentioned it before with Perry talking about the slow jigging, but I guess like the offshore stuff. So me and Perry in particular love fishing out deep, whether it be off the southwest or out of Barwon Heads. And obviously you're going into a totally different ball game with tackle. So Pez, if you touch on the more so the slow pitch, I'll go more so the micro jigging. So I find personally myself, the really cool thing with micro jigging for your rod anyway is there is some great options that are dirt cheap. So literally the Storm Gamokus, whether it be the Kandachi or the Arido, I love both of those. They're literally $100 sticks. They are awesome. They will stop big snapper. They'll stop anything else, whether it be Rat Kings, even bigger kings. I've had kingfish to about 16 kilos on this rod and got lucky and landed them purely because you can just give them hell. But I will say, when it comes to your reel, when you're fishing out there, you do have to step it up. So I've sort of got two I mainly use. So I find I love about a 5,000 size reel because you can fit, if you get a really good quality sort of 20 to 30 pound braid, you're looking at about a PE 1.5 to PE 2, which you can fill the spool of a 4,000 or 5,000 reel with that. You can get about 300, sometimes a little bit more meters of line on. So it allows you to fish in that 100, 120, 150 meters. So two reels I really love are the Stratic FL for this sort of fishing, the new one. Really, really good. I find they're not a great reel when you're fishing for really hard running fish. I've burnt a lot of drags in them, but in terms of just muscle and grunt, get that thing up off the bottom. Awesome reel. Other one I fish when I'm fishing heavier line, I find the Shimano Stellar, the 2013 one. I would love to get the latest, but let's be honest, it's probably not going to happen for a while with this current situation. But I find that is a really awesome reel when you're fishing more that PE3 with your micro jigs, especially out deeper. It just allows you to put a lot of hurt in those bigger fish. And whether you're hooking like those much not better sized kingfish or seriolas, whatever is in your area, you're going to get those, you're going to have a much better chance at sort of landing that, those sub, like those 10 kilo plus specimens of whatever you're hooking as bycatch. And let's be honest, as you know, Perry, when you're out deeper, there is a lot of ooglies.
Oh, yes. That's the bycatch fun.
Yeah. And obviously, I will say multicolored braid, you want to have multicolored braid so you can just see where your jig is and you know when it's about to hit the bottom before you get snagged up and lose it. Because I know, especially out wide, the last thing you want is to get snagged in 100 meters. And have your line accidentally break 70 or 80 meters up because it gets expensive. You don't want that. But, man, what are you using for your slow pitch? So it's more of an overhead style, as we could say.
Yeah, I've sort of converted to spin to overhead, or from spin to overhead, I should say. Basically, as I said before, I can free spool my jig back down to the bottom after X amount of cranks without having to take my hand off the rod or reel, essentially. I can click it in and out of gear. But spin's still fine. I just find over it a lot easier. Personally, as I said, I'm using a Palms Witch Crest. And that's rated I think it's 0.8 to 1.5, right up to 110 gram jigs, but I can get away with about 120. And the reel I'm rocking is a Shimano Oshia Jigger 150. And they go great together. Unfortunately, the rod hasn't got a lot of power in it. So it's not the greatest if you want to get into your tuna and your kingfish and whatnot. for working those jigs, it's just phenomenal. Having that nice slow taper allows them to get a real good action. And a bit reverse to what we'll say with the plastics with a nice stiff rod setting the hook. I find the softer rod, you do get a bit better load up on it, and which I think we're going to touch on a bit later, using multiple hooks, they're going to stick. You don't have to go too crazy on them.
Exactly.
And yeah, I'll use, as Dylan was saying, a real thin braid, but as I said, it's like a PE1, PE1.2, and so I think it's 25-pound Shimano Oshia. And my, once again, multicolored, so I can see where it is, and it's, yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and that's the sort of perfect outfit for your Bass Strait bottom fishing. Like, so in, especially when you're in that, say, 20 to 60 meters, which you're normally fishing off Barwon Heads here, anywhere between that, it's ideal. But it still allows you when you want to go off the southwest of the state, or you also do a lot of fishing up, say, off the Gold Coast even. Still, that's putting a right outfit for up there. You might want to go a bit beefier, but...
Yeah, I think with the rods, you do want to go more for the jig weight you're going to be using. Absolutely. As opposed to, you know, if you want to chase snap, yeah, 20-pound braid's great, but that might be right up to, say, 180-gram jigs, which for the sort of fishing I'm doing isn't really needed. So the rod music's only rated, I think, yeah, 12 to 15-pound tops, but for working those jigs, that's fantastic. And I could also get away with about 130 grams and, yeah, brilliant rod. And the other thing I noticed with, say, a slow pitch rod compared to a micro jig rod is, with the micro jig rods, I tend to find, obviously, the most of them got split grips. And with this micro jig rods, that bottom grip on the split, it's quite long. And having that under your arm, working it all day, for me, it just wears, rubs, and just gets annoying. With the slow pitch ones, real long butt with a tiny little end grip. So you've pretty much just got blank under your arm. And it feels great. And you can jig it all day, no worries.
And I will say, Perry pointed that out to me one day when I was buying a slow pitch rod, and I couldn't unsee it. And now I cannot pick up a rod that has a traditional slow grip, because I noticed under my arm, it's rubbing. And even through a t-shirt at the end of the day, even through a long sleeve, you find you're getting a rash where your boob is, or where your arm, like where your sort of forearm or your bicep is. And it just ends up being uncomfortable, especially if you're on a multiple day trip. If you're lucky enough to go over to NZ, or you're fishing South Australia, or going over to WA, you will notice that. So as Perry said, get a rod that's got that bare blank. And if you're new to this fishing, do not be fooled. Like, these rods, they are light. It is light tackle. But as we said, the outfit is matched to the lure, but you can land some freaking ridiculous fish on this tackle. Like a good mate of mine, Aaron Dillon, he landed, I think it was a dogtooth tuna, about 20 kilos on a PE3 slow jig outfit. So, and by all means, that is not uncommon. Whether it be a good kingfish, dogtooth, big trevally up north, whatever it be, you can stop some awesome fish on this gear.
And with that grip setup, it's very hard to explain like this, but if you go into a shop and you pick up a rod and actually feel it, you'll know straight away exactly what we're saying. And with the power on those rods, bit of a funny story. The Oshia Jigger, it's got a feature on it called lock. And basically, if you click that in, there is, as the word says, it's locked and there is no drag. And we're all off bar on heads. We're just catching a few snapper and a few bits and pieces. We put it in lock mode to see how it all go. And the load on those rods is just ridiculous. And you think it's going to snap at any moment, but the rod just keeps going, going, going. You'd be very surprised when you can put those rods through.
Oh, and I've heard the lock feature is great for pranks. Like when I've been over in NZ at the Ranfurly, I've heard of a few very, very funny stories from both Ranfurly and the Three Kings where people have brought the biggest, what is it, the 2000 or the biggest size Oshia Jigger. And while their mate will be doing something, someone will put it in lock and next minute they'll go and hook a 25, 30, 35 kilo kingfish or a big harp hooker, and they don't know their reels in lock and they're holding on for dear life or snapping 120-pound braid straight up.
I like that one.
I want to do it to you, mate. It'll be a laugh.
I'll be very aware when you're on the boat with me.
Your fragile little frame will be going for a swim, I'll tell you what.
No. You won't be anywhere near it.
Oh, I don't know. But anyway. Moving on, I guess everyone loves it when you talk about a new species just rattling off favourite lures. So, I don't know, we have a list in front of us. I have a suspicion this could be very similar for all of us. If it's not, mention whatever's not there. But Pez, your all-time favourite snapper lures, just what would you have to have? No limit, just within reason, of course.
If I had to pick three, and I'll say three for, say, we'll say summer, spring to summer. Because for me, they do vary between winter and summer, obviously because where I'm fishing and what the fish behaviours are like. But we'll say for the typical snapper season, Jerk Chad 5-inch by Gulp in Nuclear Chicken. That's probably my number one. It's very, very basic. Everyone uses it, but it just works. Simple as that. A very, very close. It only just came out recently, I think about a year ago, is the 5-inch Jerk Shad Crazy Legs. So they're basically the exact same as a Jerk Shad, but they've got two little curl tails on the end. And absolute slayer. We've only used it, had it for one season, and it absolutely brained the fish. And in Lime Tiger.
Lime Tiger. So that is the colour and a plastic. I do not think I've even got a snapper on.
Oh, Lime Tiger. Nuclear Chicken and Lime Tiger for me is just neck and neck.
Yeah.
I'm only saying you're
lighting up right now. What does he want to say?
Like, I was in the store, 2 days ago, Perry, and we were having a bit of a chat before this, and I said the same thing as you do. I've never, Nuclear Chicken I've caught a few on, but yeah, is it like Lime Tiger? I don't think I've ever cast it. And I've just looked at it and been like, it just looks like a pale Nuclear Chicken.
Well, I guess we should say, for anyone that doesn't know, get stuffed if you want us to name every single one of these plastics and the colours and describe them all. Not going to happen, but we will name Lime Tiger. It is wacky. So for anyone out there, imagine a literal lime chartreuse sort of green with what do you call almost a powder baby orange that's got some sort of fluoro with black specks all through it. It looks like nothing. But, Perry slays on it, and you cannot deny that. And he's got
absolutely a lot brain of
good fish on it.
I remember in the Geelong store, we were absolutely pumping through them, and I came to Lavin's store to work one day, and I saw a full shelf on them, and I reckon I bought nearly every single one.
I think I told you, take them all. We couldn't move them.
Oh, yeah, they're epic, yeah. And no, I've had to...
Everyone wants camo. You can only sell camo.
And if I had to pick a third... Typically, if the fish are a bit more shut down and they're a bit more, a bit touchy, probably a 4-inch Gulp Minnow again. Flogging the gulps here. 4-inch Gulp Minnow in New Penny. It's another really good one.
That is the Port Phillip Bay special. That is one of my all-time go-tos. So.
But I've got a feeling this season that's going to be replaced by the 7-inch Jerk Shad. I'm very confident.
7-inch?
Yep.
There you go.
Well, I did it in Lime Tiger. They do new chickens and not Lime Tiger.
All right, I'll mention mine, the humble turtleback worm. So for years it's only been available in a 4-inch in Australia. I got very lucky and managed to get some 7-inch ones a lot more than 5 years, probably 6 or 7 years ago now from the US, and they brained it. So the 4 and the 7-inch, I found whether you're fishing open mud flats in up to about 10 metres of water or whether you're rolling them into the depths of pylons, they are just brutally good. So they just imitate the sandworms and everything in Port Phillip Bay better than anything else. And whether it's 20 centimetre pinkies or 7.5 kilo reds, they demolish them. So the rest of my favourites are very similar to what Perry said, but I will touch on Z-Mans. I use a lot of Z-Man. The streaks in the 3.75 and the Jerk Shads in the 5-inch, the scented ones, they're fantastic, especially I think it's called Silver Minnow or something. It's sort of an electric blue with an electric silver colour. Absolutely dynamite. It just imitates the anchovies and pilchards we get down here in Port Phillip Bay really well. And, yeah, can't go past it. Works a treat.
I will say early last season, the Z-Man streaks in 3.75 was the number one lure to have. We didn't have them on the boat. We'll catch fish, but they were just absolutely braining fish. Ridiculous numbers on those things there. Particular motor oil, which, very basic colour, but motor oil just catches fish.
And the red bone colour's good, but I will say the Z-Man, when Perry's best friends, the snook, are about, put the Z-Mans on, because you'll be going, even the Z-Mans, the snook go through them.
Oh, yeah.
And the other good plastic I think I talked about them earlier, the Kitex, so the fat swing impacts in particular, I think it's a 3.8 and a 4.8. I think even the bigger size, they're fantastic. So they've got a massive big boot paddle tail with a ribbed body. I find you can fish them on quite a heavy jig head and just hop them along the bottom, but also load them up with scent. Like I normally get the mullet Procure and just cake it on. And they've probably accounted for some of the biggest snapper I've seen coming out of the bay. So last year we got fished to about northern end of Port Phillip Bay up to about 7.5 kilos on those. And we found they're a lure you don't get many pinkies on, which sometimes can be a great thing, but you'll find those fish over that sort of 2.5-3 kilo mark just demolishing, work a treat.
What are your thoughts on the new gulp scent too, by the way, boys? How do you reckon that'll go this season?
I think it'll be ridiculous, but I haven't used it yet myself. I need a taste test.
I'm very, very keen to throw it. Very keen.
Would you eat it on toast? Is it that good?
Or I'd put it as, I'd use it as a replacement for wasabi on pike sashimi.
I like it.
Yeah.
I remember when the S Factor came out, like someone I fished with at the time, he was like, yeah, have you tried this S Factor? I'm like, nah, not yet. I'm going to give it a shot. No, he's like, it's so good. He's like, it tastes like peanut butter. And I remember looking at him. I'm like, what do you mean it tastes like peanut butter? He's like, yeah, it tastes like peanut butter. It's great. I'm like, well, that's nice, but what? And then I was thinking, why are you eating that? And he's like, well, the fish like it, so I thought I had to give it a shot. I'm like, oh, well, there you go. So every time there's a new scent, just try it. Why not? Do it. Not that I have done that and I don't condone it, but that is a true story.
I'm not quite getting enough of that.
And for me, in terms of soft plastics, depending on what sort of areas you're fishing in, like you guys said, the gulp minnows, and we flog a lot of gulp minnows, but if you're casting into structure and say you need to put a tight cast in and skip it in, your gulp minnows being water-based, they tend to skip a lot better if you have to put skip casts in. So we tend to find ourselves using gulp stuff in tight structure if we have to put skip cast and stuff in, and that's the exact same for all forms of fishing where you need to put skip casts in. Gulps work really well, but also just really wide bodies, sort of style plastics with not a whole lot of movement, so not curl tails. Paddle tails are probably more better, but like jerk shad tails, so like twin forks and stuff, they're the way to go if you have to put in those sort of tight skip casts, just because it comes off the water a lot nicer too. So yeah, other than that, these boys have covered it nicely in terms of what I think are pretty good, so I'm not going to add anything to that.
There's one more thing I'll quickly go on there. That was sort of more the summer plastics, those ones there. When it comes to winter, I'll dramatically downsize, so I'll use a lot of the Z-Man stuff, so the Z-Man Slim Swims in 2.5 and 3 inch. They're a cracker. And also when the fish are real fussy, which they can be in winter, especially on the shallow weed beds, like your gulp crabbies, gulp sandworms, and 4-inch turtleback worms. Those 4 or 5 months just there, they're all crackers. So you sort of go away from your 4, 5-inch, even 7-inch plastic, you're going right down to 2, 2.5 inch, and you'll be surprised the sort of fish you will catch on those small lures.
Like I found, like you said, the crabbies, they're traditionally more of a brim plastic, but I found this winter, like the amount of like 2, 2.5, even up to 3 kilo snapper I was catching, just skip casting them. Like they're not ideal for skip casting, but you rig them unweighted, pitch them into pylons and just let them drift down, and the amount of good fish that were just clunking them, because to them it's just a little morsel. These fish, they're really dormant in winter there. So you can imagine the fish's metabolism in that cold water, it's pretty slow. So they don't really want to get up and go chasing a big 5 or 7 inch bait fish or squid around. But if they see a tiny little thing just drift past their face, it might just get their curiosity. So I found really lightweighted plastics, whether it be a little worm profile like Perry's, like this gulp 6-inch sandworm or the turtleback, or like the 4-inch or 3-inch minnow like Mitch mentioned, they're just a primo choice. Give it a shot if you haven't before.
Anything gulpy can't go too wrong, let's be honest.
And I don't think that's changed in about 15 years of fishing.
No, I don't think it will either.
No, it's too good.
And quickly, Rattle, just if you guys have some preferences in terms of jigs, because obviously you talk about the jigging styles, what sort of jigs would you be going for as well? And hook setups too.
I'm a big fan of Storm Quakers. I have always used them. I have used a fair few different brands now, and I just keep going back to them. So in Port Phillip, the 20-gram one every now and then, just with a single assist, or the 40-gram with twin assists, so one on top, one on bottom. But more so I'm using them offshore Barwon Heads or Southwest Victoria. So if I'm Barwon Heads, it'd be 40 or 60 grams with the twin assist, so one top, one bottom. If I'm going Southwest Victoria, normally I'm going the 100 and the 150 grams. So upping that a lot, considering I'm fishing in deeper water. Plus you often want to get past barracuda and a lot of shit fish like arrow squid and everything else. And I'll normally go a twin assist on the top with a single assist on the bottom. And I always, always, always run some sort of crystal flash or octopus style oki jig on the top. So I'll tie all my assists from scratch most of the time, but there are some awesome ones you can get in your packets by Shout and BKK that I also have a few on hand and highly recommend too. And what's your setups, Perry?
Literally the exact same as you, actually. So a lot of mine's off Barwon Heads, so anywhere from, as it was 30 right through to, say, 60, 80 off Barwon, and then out a bit deeper, 100-plus. When I try and pick a weight, I go off the general rule of thumb, 1 gram per metre. So if I'm in 40 metres, 40 grams, generally a pretty good weight. But obviously, with the wind and current, it may have to change. And, I always run twin hooks on the top. Typically, I really like the BKK Sea Ranger Plus. They're a really good hook. Love them. And then on the tail, I'll run just one single assist, and I run that for nearly all my jigs. Maybe the jigs under 30 grams, I won't bother too much. But anything 40 and over, I'll always run, two on the top and then one on the bottom. And, Quaker jigs, they're an absolute slayer. That's pretty much what I've been used most of the time. And, as Dylan said, I've tried other brands, keep going back to the Quakers, but I have been using a few of the Palms Slow Blats lately, and they've been really, really cool.
They're one I haven't tried yet, but I'm pretty keen. They seem to be going well. And like a lot of people ask, like, why run so many hooks in such a small lure? Purely because since you're fishing quite deep, you want to have a few different hook points for those fish to try catch on. And often the other thing is, like, you've got this lump of lead, but it certainly has action, but when it's sitting there and you're moving it quite slowly, it's really appealing just to have some sort of flash or sort of something to catch the fish's attention. So, and what that'll do is sort of like just entice to come up, have a look. And most of the hits, they're not slamming it like they are a plastic, as Perry would know. It's like sometimes it's almost like these little taps. And that's just like you can have sometimes like a 8 or 10 kilo fish, whatever species it be, come up. And it will almost just be like nipping at your assist hooks with the flash or the oki skirt. And it'll just suck them in. You'll sort of load up not knowing if you've got a 20 centimeter coral perch or even like a good kingfish that's just come up and had a little bit of a sniff at your jig and managed to get hooked in the nose. So more assists, more appendages, more flash, the better.
More good.
I always run a little tiny oki, like a little 1.5-inch, 2-inch oki, or something with flash. That's why I like the Sea Rangers, or the other Shout ones are really good. They've always got a bit of flash, and as Dylan said, can only help you. I always run hooks with them on anyway.
More the merrier.
More the merrier.
So, next thing we should probably talk about, I'd say, Mitchell, modern technology.
Yeah, so obviously you guys are fishing fairly deep sort of water, and obviously you're not going out to random spots and just dropping and finding fish. You're using some technology to help you with that, and that being in the form of sounders. Perry, what sort of sounders and stuff are you running in your boat?
So typically, I'm running Simrad, so an NSS Evo 3. Awesome unit. Real easy to use, which I like. And a transducer, I think's probably one of the more important things. So I'm running a SS175 high wide. So that's a high chirp, high frequency transducer, which gives you a much wider beam. So fishing in water, say, under, say, 120 metres, that's giving you awesome pickup. Anything deeper than that, you might want to shift over to a different transducer. And with that 175, we've also got a 3D module with a transducer that gives you downs imaging and side imaging, as well as 3D mapping on the bottom, which call it cheating, but it's pretty handy to mark up that reef and the fish. when, as I was saying before, if I'm not marking fish or bait, I'm not going to bother. And for me, a sounder, especially offshore, is absolutely paramount. If I don't have the sounder, I think you're wasting your time. It's a bit of a harsh way to say it, but that's my honest opinion. In the bay, you could probably get away with it a bit more, casting at your structure. But offshore, you're fishing up and down. You've got an alum on the head. If you haven't got a good sounder, you're not going to get that right pickup. And with the better sounders, you're going to just, you know, you're going to tell what difference between a, say, a snapper and a school of, say, pike or
your favorite,
you know, fish. My favorite, yeah. So definitely carry with all your gear. Invest in a good sound, a good transducer, and you can't go too wrong. And that, yeah. And with the bay, I'm pretty much run the exact same, especially a lot more side imaging in the shallow water.
Yeah,
awesome. Just allow those fish either side of the boat. So if you're drifting in, say, I do a lot of my fishing between 4 and 12 meters of water, and with that side imaging, as the name says, you can see left and right of your boat. You're drifting. Oh, there's a school of fish 20 meters to my left. Cast, bang. Whereas on your normal sonar, you won't pick those fish up. So yeah, every bit of advantage you can get is always good. But yeah.
Now, I guess that sums up sound as fantastic. Electric. So you're lucky enough you got the smaller boat as well, so which you're using in your bay work. Your electric, what is it and how is it helping you? Because I know personally that is a massive asset to have when you're fishing for snapper in Port Phillip.
Oh, absolutely. Obviously, yeah, it's like a game changer with any sort of fishing you do with your lures. With your winter and your structure fishing, obviously you can creep around and in a stealth approach towards all your different structures and pylons and boat holes and bits and pieces without disturbing too much. So that's a given. But I really, really like it out in the bay drifting my little snapper ground. So basically what I do is I'll have my boat, you know, nose into the wind, and I'll have my Minn Kota. I couldn't tell what the actual feature's called, but I call it autopilot. And basically depending on the speed of the wind, I'll adjust my speed, and that basically slows my whole drift down. It's not going into the wind, it's not spot locking, but it's just allowing me to really drift slower, and I can really pepper ground much better. Depending on what the bite's like, I might want to drift quicker or drift slower, and basically when I pick up a fish that, or I get a bite that feels good, I'll just hit spot lock, my boat stops where I am, I pepper that spot. If I don't get anything else, I take it off spot lock. Back in the autopilot, just keep drifting. And you'll see so often boats out there, even with sea anchors, and they're drifting twice the speed as you, especially in rougher weather, and allows you to just fish that bottom a lot better. And instead of having maybe 3 or 4 flicks of your plastic and then you've got to recast, you can have 10 and just allows you to fish that bottom much better. And as I said, when you find your fish, your spot lock, you're not scaring any fish, you're not moving around, adjusting your anchor, this and that, and swinging, you're stopped right where the fish are. So for me, I mean, Kota is probably the biggest thing for the way I fish for them in the bay.
Absolutely. I'd say if you're fishing on a boat, I'd almost have a Minn Kota over a sounder in a lot of applications there.
I reckon you could confidently say that for sure. Definitely.
Sure. And, well, I guess that sounds up like your electric motor really well. Hobies, which is me and Mitch's little baby, I guess. So I guess, well, Mitch, let's be honest. It's all the same reasons as it was last week. But for me, if you've got something else, please add it in. I will say you can just get into structure, under structure, into little nooks and crannies where no one else can get on the biggest piers or wharfs around the bay that you're allowed to, let's just say that, and find those fish that are just a lot more unpressured, I guess, in a high-pressured fishery.
Yeah, that's right. So they just give you that little level of stealth, and I reckon you can't really go past it. And not to mention, at the same time as well, if you've only got a short amount of time to actually go fishing, we can just throw them in a roof. It takes maybe 2 or 3 minutes to rig them up, and we can put them basically right on where we're going fishing to. So access to waterways and access to those like sorts of places is really good. I put my order down for a new Hobie, and it's going to have reverse in it. So for the same reason that Perry has spot lock, having the ability to change my Hobie in and out of forward and reverse is going to help me to stay on the spot as well. It's obviously a bit more management than spot lock, but it's the closest thing you can sort of get to without actually buying an electric motor for your kayak. So I reckon that's going to be a massive game changer. And in terms of the areas of Perry's fishing, you can get to them in a kayak as well. And I'm probably going to set mine up very similar to the way that Perry has his sounder set up and everything. Mate, I don't know if I'm going to run Garmin or Lowrance or whatever, but I'll have it there. I'll be running side scans and stuff too. So it's basically downsized like small boat in terms of like your bay fishing. And you can take them offshore to go chase snapper, but you're probably not going to make it to 150 meters. And if you are, I tell you what, you've put some Ks on the legs at that point, and I'd be really fearing for your safety. And if you don't have an E-perb at that point, well, yeah, you've done yourself a mischief, really. So,
if you want to take 50 Ks offshore, but I'd skip that.
Yeah, I'd skip that. Maybe if you've got a Hobie Adventure Island, possibly would you go 50 Ks offshore. But I tell you what, when the boats are out there chasing tuna, a tuna and snapper out real wide, if you see a Hobie out there, you'll be fairly amazed.
Give them a hand because I think they'll want it.
Yeah, I'd be staying pretty close by because there's going to be a death otherwise.
Don't do that, anyone, for God's sake. Crazy, like even off... I've seen there, like in Victoria, it's pretty common for people in their Hobies to go target like tuna in particular. Sometimes they're going out to like the 40, 50, 60 meter line. And I've been out there before, like, I don't know, you'd be 15, 20 Ks offshore and you'll see a Hobie normally with the sails, mind you. And I'm tearing my hair out. I'm thinking, I lose my mind half the time when I'm out in the middle of Lake Bull and Mara, thinking, oh man, I'm a long way from the shore here, or if I'm a long way off in the bay and there's some dude out in 100 meters of water or something, or Cape Bridge water, and you're like, what the hell? But hey, people do it. But if you're going to give it a shot, just make sure you're doing it safely and you got all the right gear for it.
Yeah, well, Dylan sent me on a wild goose chase once off Portland. He said it was 400 meters off Wally's Rant to go get to the 14 meters line. It turns out it's about 4 or 5 Ks. So I was out there in 14 meters of water, and that's not that deep, but at the same time, it's a long way for your body to sink to the bottom. So I was out there and, yeah, didn't catch any kings, but I reckon I saw some of the sounder. But, yeah, it's a hell of a lot further out there in a kayak. So if you're doing it, wear all the right safety stuff. We can't stress that enough. E-perbs, life jackets, try and fish with your mates if you're going that far offshore, to try and catch some fish in the salt water. And even in your bays, safety gear. Can't stress it enough in a kayak. You never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Now, well, that's probably all the modern technology. So, as always, since we're nice people, we want you guys to catch more fish. And we always have this segment, sort of the 1% tips and tricks. So, we'll all rattle off a couple. Like, I've written down a few points we've got in front of us, but this list is endless. But for me personally, this I'm sure will come up all the time, but with snapper in particular, I find jig head choice is paramount. There is a lot I don't like and not much I like. But when you're picking a head, pretty much you want it to be razor sharp, and you pretty much want to touch it and feel your skin sticking. That's how sharp you want it to be, because if it's not, Perry mentioned it earlier, when you go to jam that hook in, it's just almost going to bounce off its teeth. It's not even going to find its way in. And for that, you want to make sure you're choosing a hook with a really fine gauge. And a really cool little tip is also just look at the barb. Like a lot of the, like I will name drop TT headlocks, they're a really, really good strong hook, but I often find personally the barb is so large on it that a lot of the time you go to whack a fish, you hook him, and halfway through the fight, bang, you lose your fish. And you're like, why'd that happen? And purely I've put it down to, you know, it could be my angle error, who knows, but the barb. So what I started doing is like crushing that barb down completely, or if you don't want to do that, just crush it a little bit. Since I've done that, I have dropped hardly any fish purely because that barb's not putting resistance when you whack that hook into that fish. And now I've started almost crushing barbs on all my hooks, and catch rate's gone through the roof purely because you get more fish to the boat. It just works well.
Yeah, especially if you drop with a fish, like a snapper with a really hard point to its mouth, being able to set that hook point all the way through into the bend of the hook, getting all the way past the barb. If your hooks is like your hooks are in the bend, your hooks are going to be far strong as well. So they're not going to bend out. So setting that hook all the way to the bend is key. So small barbs, finer gauge as you possibly can. Obviously, like don't go crazy light if you're targeting really large fish. But yeah, like the finest gauge possible. And as Dill has written here, strong AF. You want it to be strong AF.
Oh yeah.
If you don't know what that means, you live under rock too.
So. Like we'll name drop a couple of heads to make it really quick. Like as I said, TT headlocks. Fantastic head. Just crush the barb. You will find your catch rate goes through the roof. Next would be, I love the Berkeley Nitros, especially if you can find the old ones. They are fantastic. A lot of people rag on them because they're just old. They're often forgotten about, but very, very strong hooks, very, very hard to bend out. They're razor sharp and they stay sharp. Next would be the Atomic Seekers. They're pretty damn good. I will say do not fish these if you're fishing for snapper around structure or heavy fish. I have bent out a lot of them. But at the end of the day, they are razor sharp. They are very, very good jig heads for more of that sort of like fishing on your 3 to 5 kilo tackle in more so your open water. And what are you running, Pez?
Well, as you said, the TT headlocks, they're probably my number one. They're probably my favorite. Very closely followed by the Berkeley Nitro, saltwater pro ones.
Yes.
Because there's gauge. But as you say, it's about finding a good happy medium between going too thick, not getting good penetration, and going too thin and then just getting bent out every time. But in terms of a thinner gauge hook, well, a lighter hook, the Atomic Seekers, they're really good. I've had pretty good success and fortune not bending too many out. I tend to bend most of them out when I'm actually trying to get it out of the fish, not actually from the fight. But I find, yeah, TT headlocks, Berkeley, Nitro Saltwater, and as a light option, the Atomic Seekers. But they're all pretty good. That's my three.
And if you are, like, especially in the winter fishing when you're running smaller plastic, I think you're on the same, Pez, but a leg from last week, again, Gamma Katsu round 25s. If you're running, like, really small stuff, whether it be the Streaks, the Z-Man Grubs, or Slim Swims, or smaller gulps, I find the round 25s by Gamma Katsu. They're super fine wire. These are a finesse jig head, but when you're fishing, say, that 2 to 5 kilo gear where you have to use to run smaller plastics, you do not bend them out. Like I've got a lot of fish in that 2, 2.5 kilos, and they're fantastic. And I find like with those lighter ones, I'm running, say, a 1/20th up to about a 1/8 if I'm fishing deeper water. But yeah, they go pretty well. And personally, my preference in Port Phillip Bay, open water, I'll run normally a 1/8 head on average, but sometimes I will go up to a 3/8. And that's the same for offshore pretty much. Like very rare I go to a 3/8, but if it's a really windy day where I really want to just bounce that plastic slowly on the bottom, say with a turtleback worm, it goes very well.
Yeah, I'm about the same. Where I fish, I probably use a 1/6 more than anything, in particular a 3/0. But I find that's really, really good on the jerk shads. As I said, I've used a lot of the jerk shads in 5-inch, and I find a 3-0, even a 4-0 is really good on those. 1/6 to a quarter. At times I'll run an 1/8. I think even when we went out that one morning last season, we went out down to 1/12, was it? Or even lighter.
Yeah, we like morning, but like all the pinkies were on 1/8 and 1/12, which is the other thing. Like this is a huge 1% tip you'll hear from anyone and everyone, no matter what species you fish for, fish as light as you can. A lot of times when I'm snapper fishing, I will fish unweighted. Like I'll go literally just a standard hook, thread my plastic on, pitch it in, just let it drift. That slays. Mm.
One thing I always do when I go out, I tend to always start with a lighter head because this is me. I find it easier. Well, for me, it's more obvious if the lure's not getting the bottom as opposed to if it's sinking too quick. So if I start with, say, 1/6 and I need to go heavier, it's much easier for me to realise, all right, I need to go heavier, go quarter, as opposed to going to quarter, which is still hitting the bottom, when really I could be using a 1/6. So I typically always tend to start with my lightest jig head and then I'll ramp it up from there.
Yeah, which is a very good way of looking at it. I like that. It just sums it up perfectly. So, and if you've never fished for snapper before and you want to get into it, start with that tip. Or even with plastics in general, to start as light as you can and just keep progressing up. to the heaviest
head. And same with the hook tries. I don't go a bit like what I was saying with the rod to match the jig. I don't go by hook size for the fish I'm targeting. I go by hook size for the plastic I'm using. Always. Obviously, there might be a few exceptions, but 99% of the time it is this hook for that plastic.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those things when you're rigging up your soft plastic as well, like if you haven't done soft plastic fishing a lot in the initial phases, you might look at someone might recommend you a jig head and a hook size and a plastic, and you might say a 4-inch turtleback worm, and you might rig it with say like a 1-0 hook or something, a 2-0 hook, whatever it is, size one hook, somewhere in that category. You'll put it in there and the hook's going to look really small. But then if you think about it and you get that soft plastic and you ball it up in your hand, there's actually not a whole lot of plastic there, and every really, really small fish are going to suck all that down in their mouth. And so it looks funny, but it just works. So don't be too afraid of that stuff.
Not at all. And the next thing, I guess we've touched on it, just what we call a suicide cast. Like if you're fishing, this is like when you're fishing structure, whether it be rock wall, wash zones or piers, pylons, jetties. Us three, that's what we mainly fish in Port Phillip Bay a lot of the time, especially in the cooler months. You will find you got to get your plastic in. Like sometimes the fish won't be sitting in there, but once it starts sinking down, you want it to be right in that zone and then bring it to where the fish are sitting. But then a lot of the time the fish, that's where they are, in the darkest, deepest crevice. Like learn to skip cast, get proficient at it, and you will catch a hell of a lot more fish.
Danger casts.
You lose a few heads, but hey, that's the way it goes.
Dangers.
I took a bit more notice too this last season, it was even the season before, was even just the leader I was using. Like, unfortunately, the pike got pretty bad. Fortunately, they were in great numbers, and I was going through a lot of tackles. So, for the rod I'm using, the Destroyer, if I was to go over, say, a 14-pound leader or 16-pound, it's getting a bit sketchy going through the guides, even with an FG knot. So I use a lot of FC Rock. Oh, brilliant leader. But this last season, I forgot what it's called, but it's by Momoy, and it's a pink leaf fluorocarbon. It is a little bit thicker. Yeah, it is a little bit thicker than the average fluorocarbonate size, but the abrasive resistance you get from it smashes everything in its class. So I've gone down to like 10, 15-pound, but it's as abrasive as 20+. And the amount of tackle I'm getting back and not losing to pike, even snapper at times, is phenomenal. And, it is pink, but it loses colour, I believe, under 1.5 metres of water. It's completely invisible. So it allows me to drop it down my... Fluorocarbon, isn't it? Sorry?
Fluorocarbon, isn't it, that stuff?
Yeah, it's a fluoro, yeah. I couldn't tell the actual name of it off the top of my head, but available at Trellis. And it's fantastic stuff. Super tough. Twice a good knot. And I've converted to that this season. But when I'm fishing in, say, the structure, I tend to sometimes go shallower than 1.5 metres. And I'm a bit superstitious. I tend to go back to FC Rock in case I go shallow water. Probably doesn't make a difference. More notice too.
Are you dropping your leader size in the shallows as well?
Yeah, it's sort of a balancing act. You want to get as hard as you can, but you don't want to lose that good bite you get that day doing one of those suicide casts. So if I'm casting real hard in the structure, I'd love to use 10-pound fluorocarbon, but some days you got to go down a bit lighter.
Yeah, like I've found more often than not what I've started doing, like I don't like fishing too light for them because, as you know, like big fish in shallow water, it ends in tears. But I found... On the lighter rods, you can sort of get away with it. Like I've been running the Miller Rod Brawler, which is kind of cool because it's a short, little stocky rod made for pitching small lures for hard-fighting fish. So I found that with 8-pound leader, I can really muscle out fish to about that 2.5 kilo mark. Any bigger and it gets hairier, you can still do it. You can go up to about 12-pound leader, no stress in the world. But I found that 8-pound and that shallow, clear stuff gets you the bite. But yeah,
you'd be very surprised how much pressure you put on 8-pound.
Okay, as you go.
It's amazing how much pressure you can actually put on 8-pound fluoro too.
It is. And people, try running a slightly longer leader so you got more sponge, because that way you can pull harder. So if you've got a short leader, if you've got 2 foot of fluoro, there's only so much stretch, and it's going to break quicker than, say, if you've got 8 foot a litre. So I tend to run a bit longer than most people would, like a couple of wraps on the reel. I just find that way that sponge can come into its own.
And at the end of the day, fluorocarbon is a lot more abrasion resistant than braid. So the more fluorocarbon you have, the more chance you have if it does touch something that you're going to get your, like you're going to still land your fish. But I'm not saying run a whole spool of fluoro either, because then it's all sponge and then that fish has a lot of give too. So you have to reach that happy medium in between there as well. So think about that when you're spooling up too.
And then like if it's, I have had it a lot where say you're getting a lot more of those bigger fish, say that 4 kilo size plus, in really tight structure. And let's be honest, there's no in between. I just go straight to 25-pound fluoro, because if you start dropping less than that, normally, too bad if you hook up, they're going to roast you every time. So it's sort of just go the agricultural technique and hold on and rip them out.
Yeah, I'm super excited to go out and fish with you boys and try and actually catch some of those bigger species, those bigger fish as well. Obviously, there's a few spots of dill and a few of our other mates fish too. So with the new Hobie, hopefully I'll get a new setup as well, and I'll be out there with those boys trying to muscle out a few of those big fish too. So, and Perry mentioned this earlier in terms of going out wider. And it's finding bait, so finding all the pelagic sort of stuff that attract fish. Do you want to touch a bit more on that, Perry, in the 1% tips?
Well, obviously, just use back to the sander thing with the bait. Use your sander. If you've got a good sander and a good transducer, you're going to pick up that bait. And this sort of goes with snapper offshore and in the bay. If they're on the bottom, in my opinion, they're more likely than not eating. So if you find bait on the bottom with snapper on it, fair chance they're eating that bait. If you see bait up a bit higher and snap a bit lower, sometimes, yeah, usually you get them to eat, but I do have some days where they just won't touch anything. But if you got the bait on the bottom or near the snapper, they're going to eat. So, yeah, that's how I go about it. I don't – offshore, I don't look too much into the bait personally. I look more for the fish holding on the right structure. And then if I see bait, it's a bonus for me more so. And as for offshore, I'm looking for reef. I like my reef bottom. You do go through a bit of tackle, but the fish do like to hold on that. So reef's good. Rubble's good too. And depth's anywhere I like, from 20 right through to 130, I've got them. Even in shallow, 15 metres sometimes.
That's it. You just find bait, find fish. Like, and even your sound is good, but your eyes can be just as handy with snapper. Like, I caught onto it when I was I was like 10 or 12 at the time at Geelong waterfront. I was in my kayak and just one of those David Attenborough moments. There was this whole school of salmon busting up and there was a few kingfish mixed in and everything else going around the outside, birds and everything. And first cast the rock up and saw these kingfish on the outside. And I was like, oh my God, this is cool. Throw in, wind, hook up. And it turned out to be sort of a decent sized pinky, about a kilo. And I'm like, what the hell? And then I was like, oh, maybe I can start targeting those. And you'd sink your plastic down and bang, get snapper, snapper, snapper. And ever since then, I've always learned, if you see activity on the top, what's down below?
There's normally always something.
I was about to say, as you said that, especially in Port Phillip Bay, if you see salmon busting up, especially in the shallow water, there's going to be snapper underneath it because they're chewing up all that bait and it's basically free burly. And if you can get your plastic to sink through them or couse to the outside or even over them, get to sink underneath them and rip it past them, you'll get snapper. Like, and you can nearly bet your money on it.
Yeah, and it's one thing I will get, like, another 1% tip, just go straight to a heavy head. Sometimes even like a half ounce, cast like 10 metres in front of where that school of salmon's going and just pray that the salmon don't eat it, and then just sit it on the bottom and just go hop, hop, hop. Often it just gets jammed, and they're normally pretty good fish.
Mm. Cool way to fish too, I reckon, that way, underneath the bust ups.
Busting up.
Buster, pike buster.
three-reel pike.
That would be dangerous. Imagine if they were like just spearing out of the water everywhere. Oh, I feel like that person the other day in Darwin who got sliced. What do they get? Sliced in the throat by a flying mackerel.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. Nah.
It'd be like Edward Scissorhands with pike. Like
Mitchell Scissorfish.
Just flying scissors.
Took a pike to the eye.
And Dill mentioned this before, if you're fishing jigs, and I'm the same, if all forms of jigging that I like, all little bits of jigging that I've done, flash and glow on your assist hooks. Perry said the little plastic squid things as well, they're really good too. And especially if you're down deep, I think, Dill, you'd recommend using some glow stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Like anything that glows or flashes, no matter what it is, just put it on your assist hooks. Like it is going to make a difference. My all-time favorite is, I think it's the Yozuri 2-inch golden bait skirts in just classic chartreuse glow. Like it, thread them on your assists. I tie them with like a 10BKK light jig, and I find that is fantastic. And I'll literally use that same assist hook for everything on my micro and slow pitch jigs, from like if I'm targeting Nanagai or Dory right up to like reasonably sized rat kingfish. Everything loves it. Works well.
Yeah, I really like little squid things. I'm not sure exactly which one they use, but like on my slow little jigs that I'm using, especially out of the kayak, it just slows the like descent rate as well, especially if I'm not trying to battle through scissors of the sea or salmon and stuff. I reckon they're fantastic.
Yes. Well, the last tip I think would say, now this one doesn't apply to Perry because he has now got a giant beacon on his boat that says to everyone in the bay, follow me because I'm going to snap a land. Move away from other boats now, or move towards Perry, which yeah. Everyone seems to do now. That's 1% tip everyone's caught on to.
Yeah, follow Perry. If Perry's not around, avoid all other boats and find your own fish.
Yes.
Try and follow the Quintrex Renegade 420. Stay away from that boat.
Everybody.
A lot of people don't listen to that, do they?
Yeah, that's
it. Nah. One thing with that boat thing, right, like, especially this season, I reckon just the boat traffic puts those fish off so much in that shallow water. And the amount of, I think of quite a few times this season, you go out in the morning and there'd be 30 boats on the grounds, just all drifting. And you look at the boats and no one's catching nothing, absolutely nothing at all. And you go out that afternoon and there's not a single boat on there and you're just braining fish every cast. And that sort of goes, it's a bit the same with the rough weather, like, on a rougher day, there's going to be less boats out there and you've got the place to yourself. You're just braining fish nearly one after the other. But in saying that, you have days you're the only boat there still and it's glass calm, middle of the day, 2 o'clock, and you're catching fish. So I think the boat aspect is probably one of the biggest things. If there's no boats there, the fish are going to bite better, you most of the time.
I found in some of the places I've been taking my kayak out, I might be there with six or seven other kayaks at one point. It's like, just say it's the one good night after work and everyone else has thought the exact same way that I have. And it's not the biggest playing field. And like, yeah, we say that kayaks are the stealthiest things going around, but yeah, they're not necessarily, like, they're putting fish down too. So,
well, especially when you're fishing like that meter of water to about 5 meters. Like, if I rock up, say fishing Corio Bay and I pull up to the boat ramp and I look to where I want to go fishing and I can see there's more than like three or four other boats or kayaks, I'll just drive 15 minutes up the road, go somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely.
Snapper are a very fickle fish. And like in my, like when I spearfish, they're probably my favorite fish to hunt purely because they're so, they're an inquisitive fish. But they're very smart. Like, they know what's going on. They know what they do not like, unnatural movement. So boats and kayaks going over their head, they hate it. And it's like the same thing when I'm sitting down on the bottom, you normally have to sit there, cover yourself up with kelp or hide behind rocks, look down and just sort of look around with your eyes to see what they're doing. The second that you make eye contact, they move. The second you sort of show your figure or your shape and that you're something unnatural, they just spook and you won't see them again for the entire dive. And the same thing, like if you're fishing for snapper in shallow water and there's lots of noise and unnatural movement going over the head, forget it. So stealth is number one and just find your own fish.
I've got a bit of my own little experiment on that one there. On my boat, I like my music. I've got a few speakers on the boat, like a sound system, and we're out there. We'd be the only boat out there on glass calm days. And we're pumping music and still catching fish. I don't know how it works, but when there's boats, no good. If I'm by myself, I've still got my music blaring, I'm still catching fish.
I have heard a theory. I think it was like a thing with marlin, with people playing like music with deep bass because it apparently brings out the fish.
But yeah, I've heard a few with it, but I haven't. I can't relate too much on that theory, but I have heard a few whispers about that one.
So basically, if you find a boat out somewhere in the bay and it's pumping music and it's a 4.2-meter boat,
to be a young child standing on the front by himself out in the bay.
Yeah, just muscle them out. Go drive them out of the spot. There's fish there somewhere.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, so we're into the really into the back half, back quarter of the podcast. So the last
few things of the podcast,
the anus of the podcast. We've got a few more topics, and then we're signing out and going to bed. What are your most memorable session, boys?
I reckon. Now, it is a tough one. I've had a few really cool ones. I've never had a session where I've like brained stacks of like massive fish, but I guess my most memorable one I remember would be. A mate had just sort of built a tinny and we went out on Corio Bay and it's given its first test run. This was the middle of June, which traditionally is probably it was July. So the worst month of the year to fish for snapper, apparently, which I've totally backflipped on that, should I say now. But we were fishing one of the piers and within the first few casts, he gets a really good fish of a couple of kilos. And I was at this time, I'd never really caught a nice fish. And I was like, oh, you bastard, I'll do anything to catch that fish or whatever. So for the rest of the day, I was just like really eager. Got some really good fish, was stoked. And then moved over to one of the piers I'd sort of heard about, but I'd never fished. And I had, it sort of went really, really quiet because it was slack tide. So I was like, stuff this, I'll just retie, put 6-pound leader on, a 1/12 jig head and a tiny little like fluorescent pink 3-inch gulp minnow. And I've sent it down, put it down 12 meters at the base of the pylons, and I've just got a hop hooked up to this thing that was just like dead weight. And I was like, it's probably just a big snook or a pike or a flathead or something. And it's sort of, I've sort of fought it. And then all of a sudden it's just started to go like, it got real heavy and then it's just gone like, zzz, zzz, and then lo and behold, probably dumped like 70 or 80 meters of line and just kept running out to deep water. And after about probably an 8 or 10 minute fight, pops up a 7.5 kilo red, which at the time was my PB, and on plastic on 6-pound line, I was losing my mind and I thought this is the coolest thing ever and I don't think I'll ever forget that session, and there's my most memorable fish and session.
Well spoken.
Yes.
I wish I was there. You've told me about that session and that spot as well, and every time I go there, I get absolute donuts. So,
and nice. I've never caught a good fish there again.
Yeah, I was about to say, as far as I'm concerned, you're lying. So yes. Take what Dill says with a grain of salt.
I will put that photo up because it did happen, you bastard.
All right.
Yeah. Harry.
For me, it's not a session with, you know, many monster fish or, you know, day of just crazy massive fish here and there. But it was last season, actually, and I was out with my mate, Liam. He's never really, you know, done a little bit of fishing, but he sort of just comes in every now and again with me and after work, like, oh, it's a good night. We'll go out, have a try and get some snapper or whatnot. And for him, you know, pinkies and flathead, snook, he's having a good night, right? So we're fishing around, we're catching, you know, nothing. It was just a very average afternoon. And we're drifting. And then put a big cast out. I was bored. I was hating it because I was catching nothing. Put me right under my arm. And then as I'm sort of on my phone, just mucking around, just had this, you know, had the bite. Fish nearly ripped it out of my arm and, you know, got ripped into this fish. Got it up and it was, yeah, about a 5-6 kilo snapper. I'm like, oh, that's all right. That's what we wanted. Put the spotlight in and literally for like 2 hours, it was every cast, if not every second cast at worst. 5-6 kilo fish, and for him, like, he's never really caught any big fish before. Like, the biggest before that would have been a flathead of maybe 34 centimeters, and just him and I out there on our own, 5-6 kilo snapper every cast summer. Yeah, it's awesome.
Did you get any
awesome? We did get some snook. Yes.
Of course you did.
Were you more excited about the snook?
What's that?
Were you more excited about the snook?
I was over the moon.
Thought so.
Did you consider trolling that day?
I did troll for a little bit to try and get some couple of pike on the board, but they weren't quite going the hard body, so when I switch over to plastics, I'll go on pretty good on those. So, yeah, not much on the crawl, but on the cast, I'll go on pretty good.
That's what we like to see. It's more acceptable on the cast.
That's it. I do prefer trolling for them. Sorry, boys.
You feel bastard. All right, Mr. Fly Guy.
Mr. Fly Guy, my most memorable session on Snapper probably only had a few Snapper involved in it because I'm most interested in fly fishing at the moment. So Dill hit me up with all the things I needed to know about fishing in my local areas, and I've been out there before fishing the completely wrong areas, which is a damn shame. But I went out a couple of weeks. Yeah, thanks, Dill. So I went out a couple of weeks ago. Probably 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. So it was just the start of the new lockdown period, but we were still able to fish, which is lucky enough. And I tied up a few of those flies that I talked about earlier, the nighttime deceiver bucktail things. And I'd fished during the day and luckily caught a couple of estuary perch in full salt water in the bay, which was pretty cool. And then proceeded to come back to that exact same location about, 2 hours later, everyone else had left. So going off that no boats theory, everyone else had left. I'd seen some good fish there beforehand while I was catching those estuary perch, and I've proceeded to cast this fly across this boat, sink it down, strip it back, and then I get a hit, and I was like, and I was actually on the phone call with my mate. So there's Perry's example. You can be talking pretty loud or playing music, but like for some reason, no boats there works really well. And I get a hit, and I was like, I think I just got a hit. And, then next minute, get a really good hit, feel a heap of weight, strip set it. I got this. It's only about a 2 kilo sort of a fish.
It's a good one. Look, 2.5, no worries in the world, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I've got a photo of that somewhere that doesn't do it justice that we might put up later as well. It's literally like centimeters away from structure, and I've just strip set it, and I've just absolutely just kept pulling on the line, because the cool thing about like fly fishing is if you're doing it for pelagic sort of fish, basically you're hand lining fish in. So point the rod at the fish and just pull your guts out. And as long as your kayak or your boat is not moving towards structure, then you're generally pulling the fish out from structure. So it can be pretty advantageous. So I pulled it out. It's sort of dogging deep, and by deep, it's probably a meter and a half of water. So it's dogging down relatively deep, cutting a few laps down the bottom. And I was thinking it's probably another estuary perch. It pops its head up. And I see it, and I was pretty over the moon that I'd got myself a reasonably good snapper in terms of fly fishing. It's gone down underneath the kayak. I thought I was about to snap a rod. But it got in the end, and it was awesome. So that was only a few weeks ago, and I'm really, really hoping to upgrade that relatively soon. But it's not an easy feat. I've been out a couple of times, and, yeah, ain't so easy.
Oh, well, you got a snapper on fly in Victoria in winter. So, and not just a pinky, like a very respectable fish. So,
very tasty fish.
Oh, they're so good.
Tasty, tasty.
Not for me.
No, he's allergic to fish.
That's right, you're allergic to fish. Not only do you have a baby face and love snook, but you're also allergic to the things you love.
Dirty troller, you endless caster.
The last part of it, we'll go through it pretty quickly. What are some of your favorite rough locations, so be it depths or actual locations that you like for snapper?
Ooh, I'll open up. So any, let's say, in this will be generalised, anywhere in Port Phillip or Corio Bay where there is a reef in about 4 to 7 metres, I like that shallower stuff. That's my favourite spot. Anywhere where there's good structure with relatively clear water with a bit of seagrass or just anything like kunji or anything on the bottom, in say 1 to, more, not even too deep, I'd say literally 1 to 5 metres, I love it. I just find I can really catch snapper anywhere in that sort of situation. If there's a bit of current or flow on it, even better. But contrastingly, I think out really deep in southwest Victoria is awesome. So anywhere from that 75 to 160 metres of water on the really heavy, heavy coral reef down that way, you cannot go wrong. Just one, the snapper are big. They're always there all year, but especially this time of year. But the bycatch, whether it's Tassie, Trumps, Nanagai, Dory, whatever it be, it is awesome.
The fish lotto.
Fish lotto, as Scotty Gray calls it. It is, it is good and it is delicious.
All right, Perry, what about you?
Yeah, for me, probably much the same as Dylan again. I do a lot in Port Phillip Bay and Cryo Bay. So in winter, I do a lot. I really like structure. So, for example, any any structure, pier, rock wall around Geelong is fantastic. I really like that. And that depth range, as little as 1 metre over weed beds right through to 10 metres off, you know, big pier. And then in summer, I like, once again, all around Clifton Springs. I do a lot of it just because it's my local. Once again, anywhere from, say, 3.5 metres to about 7. If I can find reef, that's a bonus. It's even better. But I find more over that sort of bottom there. 3-7 metres just seems to be a good depth. And offshore, once again, I'm off Bowen Head, so a bit different to where Dylan's a bit more familiar down west. 40 to 50 metres seems to be more the magic number for me. And 30s are all right, but 40, 50's been my best. Anyway, I reckon at the front of Bowen Head, you can't go too wrong. It does get a lot of pressure. I've done a bit down west, like in terms of, you know, Torquay and Anglesey and whatnot, but I do find I tend to get a lot better results from Bowen Heads.
Especially size of fish, Bowen Heads, it's good. And like you said, it's that 40-metre mark. It turns from like really heavy reef, so pretty much all from like 12 metres almost out to about 38, 40. It's all heavy reef, and then it just goes to rubble. And it's almost like the snapper follow that rubble line, I reckon. And exactly like you said, it just seems to hold a lot more bigger fish. It's
good. Obviously, an obvious one with that, going, this is the same with Port Phillip, and I find it better offshore, is obviously your drop-offs are really good. So if you can find a good drop-off for a good little pickup or a bit of a pinnacle on a reef, that's going to hold fish. Well, it's going to hold bait and it's going to hold your fish. And that's the same with Port Phillip, but I find offshore I do much better on a drop-off if you can find one. So, for example, 40 to 45 or 40 to 50, what any sort of, you know, big drop-off, that's going to hold fish.
Cool. Lovely. And then for me,
right there, Mitch, or is that cover it well?
Nah, basically the same thing. So any structure from half a metre or less, if it's nighttime, it can be less. It's surprising how shallow they'll go at nighttime. I'm surprised in the place that you'll find them at night. So anything from half a metre all the way through to about 7 metres in the bay. And definitely if you're fishing, I reckon I really enjoy this time of the year, obviously around man-made structure, but when it gets to the warmer months, if I'm trying to look for a bit better fish, I'm looking for that that natural reef in like 6 to 7 metres of water. That's where I enjoy it.
Perfect. Yep. It's all pretty similar. Like,
yeah,
some sort of structure in reasonably shallow water or very deep water, you will find them.
Very deep water with lots of structure. So, and yeah, that rubbly bottom that they were talking about too. So.
I guess moving on, I guess we might skip a few points. But so I'm in lockdown, so my snapper plans have been very postponed, let's say. But pairs in particular, so next few weeks or this weekend, what are your snappery plans? Sort of just let everyone know in enough detail that they can follow you from Lime Burners boat ramp, cough, cough.
I'll out the coordinates. Well, I'll probably from, I reckon, about this week, and I'll probably start having a bit more of a look around for them. In all honesty, I actually haven't fished, well, apart from around the waterfront in Geelong, I haven't actually started my official season, the snap, I guess you could call it, yet. So I'll probably start this weekend, if I can get out with the weather, but it's not looking too crash hot. But with daylight saving ticking, I'll start doing a lot more after work sessions. So for me, it's pretty much from now I start, really. I've done a bit of bulking up on plastics and jig heads and fresh spooling of reels all ready to go. But over the last couple of weeks and months and even now, I'm still doing a bit offshore. And, yeah, but I'll pretty much start inside the bay my official season pretty much now. And I'll probably go right through till I reckon about, you could say start of April through to Easter. And then I'll, yeah, it's about that. That's about my season. But yeah, it starts about now for me.
And have you got any goldfish? I know that you've got a goldfish, but can you tell everyone else what your goldfish is and the ideal way of catching it?
1 meter snook.
My goldfish is to catch a snook over 40 centimeters on the troll. Now, for me, it's got to be a big, like a real big snapper on plastic. And for me, a real big one on plastic is around that 20-pound mark. It's, yeah, obviously you got your goals and wishes and this and that, but for me, that's where I want to go. I've caught, that's trying to sound too arrogant, I've caught plenty around that 6, 7, even 5 kilo mark, but just getting to that 20-pound number, that's my big goal of the season. Cool. And the way it's looking,
I'm sort of a good season. They really tend to get anything over that 7 mark in particular in the bay, very hard to sort of top, especially on plastic. Been done plenty of times, but like hats off to anyone who can do it consistently. It's a very impressive fish.
Yeah, that's definitely that's probably my snapper goal in general, to be honest. A genuine, you know, pushing that 20 pound mark on a plastic. That's the pinnacle for me at the moment.
Awesome. Mitch, your goal?
I'm about that 2.5 kilo sort of fish on fly, and I would really like to match it with these boys and try, not match it, but get closer and on fly, try and get one in that sort of over 4 to 6, to be fair, 4 to 8 would be great. 8 kilo on fly would be unreal. Perry would be pretty sad if I did that before him. So probably 8 kilo on fly before Perry. Before Perry gets his 40.
I'll pump you, mate, with a sharp knife.
that's aiming high, but I like it.
probably a fish more along that 4 kilos on fly, I reckon. But to be fair, I'd be stoked to be fishing lures and get a big one too. So I don't really care too much.
Very good. Very good.
Deal.
Oh, I thought long and hard. Like I got the one big one on plastic. 7.5er. Would love a big one, but I think even a similar sized fish on the jig for me out deep would be something I don't think I'd forget very quickly. But like I think ultimate, I'm the same as you. I'd really love to get a massive, like a good one on fly, like to get one in that sort of 7 or 8 kilo range on fly on the flats for me. I think there's almost a trip over to NZ in the pipeline eventually for that. I think that'd be about the pinnacle of it.
110%. I think New Zealand's probably the place where most likely you get to first. Traveling overseas, as much as I'd love to go visit my girlfriend over in Finland first. If New Zealand's on the cards sooner rather than later, I think it'll be definitely worth the trip over there.
And it's like I've had a bit of a tinkle with the old NZ snapper, and they're good fish. They're heavier built than ours in a sense, and very available. Even land based, they're a lot of fun. I wasn't fortunate enough to crack a 20-pound fish over there, but I got some really good fish and they are awesome. And while I was there, I was like, I want to go walk the flats with fly and try find a few big fish mudding up in the mangroves. I don't think you could ever beat that and be amazing.
Perry, you'll be lucky to get an invite. do they have snook over there? I don't think they do. Yeah, you don't even want to come.
They have barracuda at least.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, they got the other swimming scissors over there, but unfortunately it weighs about 200 kilo. And it's bronze.
Oh, gigantic oceanic scissors.
That's like to slice the ones to fish directly behind the head.
Awesome. Oh.
I'll eat your 20-pound snapper on plastic.
No, that'd be right. I'll let that slide if that happens.
Very good. Well, I think that'll do for today, I reckon. It's currently 9:51 p.m. on a Tuesday evening, so I'm ready to go to bed because I know that I'm going to wake up and go to work. Dill's going to wake up and do nothing again because that's his life at the moment. And Perry, knowing his schedule, probably work tomorrow, I'd reckon.
Fair bet.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up. Like I said, like we always say, Dill, where can they find us on our socials?
You can find us at On The Cast on Instagram.
On The Cast Media.
On The Cast Media. My God, I got that wrong. There you go. Yep. On The Cast Media. That's where you'll find us. If you have any questions about today's episode, by all means, we're here. Any feedback, we'd love to hear it.
Slide into our DMs.
For those who are looking for Perry, he doesn't need to answer that because you'll find him at Lime Burners or Ocean Grove Boat Ramp. Follow him and hassle him at work and give him all the prank calls, please.
No, Perry, yeah. If you want to plug your socials, go for it. If you don't.
Nah, it's all right. You can just look me up. There's not many Perry Stavropoulos out there, so if you can spell it, you'll find me.
How do you spell it?
Stavropoulos, or you can get, or Insta is capped Perry Stav.
So the only reason Perry knows how to spell his own name is because it's written here on Zoom.
His mum had to type it in because of his baby face. He just doesn't know it.
Yes.
Legit, in grade one, I actually had to, I had my last name as one of my spelling words to take home and teach her to guilt me. I'm like, well, you spell it then. She couldn't do it, so I got away with it. And, yeah, I couldn't spell it at the time, so, yeah.
If I had a last name like that, I reckon it would have taken me to, like, year 11 to learn how to spell that.
Yeah.
It would be a fair go. I reckon I can think, apart from family, two people that can actually spell it and a handful that can actually say it properly. Big, long Greek one.
Hats off to him. That's harder than catching a 20-pound snapper on the flats on floor.
Probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, again, thank you if you've put up with us scallywags for God knows how long this was. Thank you. And cheers to all our listeners overseas especially. So for some magical reason, there seems to be a bit of a following happening in the US. We don't know why, but we thank you very much and spread the word. Please get in touch if you have any cool news. And, well, yes. So,
yeah, if you like it.
Thank you for coming on. I almost forgot you were here.
Oh, no, cheers. Thanks for having me, boys. It's good fun. Chat.
Yeah, and if you like it, screenshot it, share it on your socials, tag us in it on the cast media, especially on Instagram. We're not on Facebook yet because Facebook, we just don't like it. We'll get there eventually probably, but we're not too fast. But, yeah, Instagram. Thanks a lot, Perry. Thanks for being a deal, as always. And, yeah, we'll catch you next week. How about that?
Stress, boys, and happy snook hunting.
Happy snook hunting on the troll.
Snook on.
Snook on. All right, catches.
Thank you, guys.